Honorable members, colleagues, stakeholders, welcome back from lunch. I hope we've managed to recharge our batteries for the latter part of this of the day today. We are now if I looked at the time now as we stand, we are not looking good at the time. So we will try a different approach to try and make sure that we catch up in terms of time. If we look at the program as it stands, next on the list we should be taking, we will be taking Miss Harriet Nkosi. And I've also been notified that the representative from the King of Midlands, they have also arrived. So what we then will do, we'll take two presentations and we'll allow for a 15-minute engagement. And then some after that we'll take another two, and then we'll allow another 15 minute engagement. Then we can get to the deliberations and the recommendations. So at this point in time, I'm not too sure if Miss Harriet, because she's available to come to the podium and give us her presentation. Soon after that, then the representative, Miss Thandi Wemthembu from the Midlands, she should also be preparing to come after Miss Harriet Tukosi, and then we can take engagement after that. Clarity questions. Thank you. Over to you, Miss Harriet.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, Miss Harriet, just to confirm, 15 minutes. If you can just briefly, in terms of the background, let's get straight to the point to what you do and then the challenges.
Okay. So, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Harriet Nkosi from Ukozilwethu Secondary Cooperative, which is based in Johannesburg. It's a managing cooperative that assists primary cooperatives with business development services. Okay. Can I go to the next slide? A little bit of a background about myself. I'm a managing director of BDM Consultants, which is a consulting firm. I sit on several boards as a chairperson and as a mentor. I have a legal background. I studied law. I was appointed Business Woman of the Year 2011 by APSA. I am an ambassador for Gauteng Enterprise Propeller, and I'm also an implementation specialist. And about the Ukozilwethu Secondary Cooperative, we are five directors, all five of us with different expertise. The company is fully compliant. We have footprint in Johannesburg, Durban, and Limpopo, and a staff complement of 12 people. Okay, how the formation of Ukozi, which was an alumni state that I read on the newspaper 2010, when they said cooperatives are not doing very well in South Africa. And as a business development specialist, I took it upon myself to do something about that. But then what I then did was to mobilize other consultants who specialize in development to identify the opportunity. As it was a negative thing that was said about cooperatives, we saw it as an opportunity, a business opportunity for us. Then I got relevant expertise to join me as a consultant. We created a growing venture. And we had to put together a proper management system. Okay, so the challenges around that state that I went through is that cooperatives are not compliant, they don't comply, they fight amongst themselves, so there's too much conflict. There's poor management skills, lack of business knowledge, they don't have market, financial challenges, and occupational space. That assisted us as Ukozi to put together a model that will assist the cooperatives. So our offerings, we take the cooperatives on a three-phase incubation program. The program starts with making sure that they fully comply with the registrations, tax, financials, administrative issues, your business plans, profiles, BEE certificates. So basically we will make sure that they are fully compliant for them to be able to access opportunities that are out there. We then, after the first phase, we take them through an operational phase, which is our second phase, that looks into their day-to-day running of their businesses. We solicit support from DTI, CEDA, GEP, and a number of government organizations. We also identified a challenge around governance for cooperatives. So we saw a need for us to have a human resource department that assists them with governance. From the second phase, we then take them through to a third phase, which looks into marketing the cooperative. What we then do, we build relationships with corporates, with government. We build B2B amongst the cooperatives, and we assist them with rollout plans. We have partnership agreements, bilateral agreements. We also have put together off-take agreements. When I say put together, negotiate on their behalf for all the agreements, for them to be able to access markets. So, we have five segments, key segments under our model. The first segment is we have 35 cooperatives that are under professional services. Our model works in a way whereby amongst the five members of cooperatives, each and every member is leading a segment. So I am leading a professional services. We have youth. It's an integrated program, incubation program that we run. That also includes the youth. So amongst Ukozi Lotu Secondary Cooperative, we also have youth. A lady by the name of Fukamo, she leads youth development initiatives, whereby there's agriculture cooperatives and the hospitality cooperatives. We also have Mauricia, who leads 271 cooperatives that we call them winners. Why winners? Is because they already are on the market. They are ready for the market. They are able to produce financial statements. They are able to participate meaningfully into the economy of South Africa. So all the five segments that you see there, these are cooperatives that have gone through our incubation program, and we are confident that they are ready for the market. They are also ready to get assistance from different stakeholders. Right. Within the incubation program, we work with universities. How? We have realized that at the universities, there are graduates that are not participating in the economy because they don't have experience in business or even employment. So we will take those graduates and place them amongst the cooperatives. So it's an integrated approach on developing the cooperatives that we have in our database. We also speak to big organizations like Pick and Pay through the Ladies Network. However, we have started a relationship with our black cooperatives to participate in their procurement. And we also have international markets. I was fortunate to be part of the delegates that went to Europe, to Brazil, to Kenya, putting together a model around cooperatives. So on that trip, I was able to build relationships with other countries who are willing to assist these cooperatives that are in South Africa. Why we do all this is because I strongly believe that cooperatives can make it in South Africa. I am passionate, I have seen it work on the ground, and I know we can participate meaningfully. Okay, so the vision of UKZT is really to see primary cooperatives grow and be sustainable, to have bilateral agreements and participate meaningfully with the markets internationally. We also need to see cooperatives operating and producing quality projects on the ground, quality equipment, whatever that they are producing or manufacturing. I want to assist them to produce quality work. So the positive attitude that we took as professionals to come together and form a cooperative is also to motivate and to say, yes, there are challenges around cooperatives. However, integrated support and positive support, they will definitely make it in the economy. Currently, we have stakeholders. Halton Enterprise Propeller is one of the agency that assisted us. This happened after I made a call to SAFM as one of the, I think it was the CEO, and she was just making a discussion, and I was not in agreement with what she was saying, so I sent in and featured, and I started engaging. Then they said, okay, see us at the offices. That's when I started seeing change. That's when we started seeing funding coming through to our organization, because how we started secondary cooperative is we took money amongst the directors of UKZT to start this project, because it was a groundbreaking project that needed a lot of money, and we did not have experience for this cooperative, so we moved in it in the sense that we were able to put money together above $1 million to really have a pilot project that can impact the people at the ground levels, and we did exactly that. So, can you give me the next slide, please?
Sorry.
Honourable
members, there seems to be some technical errors with our projection. We'll try and get technical guys to assist, to come in and assist us, because it keeps on flicking and going.
Yeah. Okay, maybe let me just switch to challenges now.
No.
Okay. Challenges that are faced by cooperatives on the ground, I'm not going to deliberate on the challenges that have been alluded. However, I'm going to say the key challenges that we see. As much as we are a secondary cooperative, we have experience, we have run our businesses successfully. I personally employ 250 people under my company, so this shows that we do have the capabilities and the know-how to run a successful business. However, when we started the cooperative and when we go and work in the government departments, we get challenges around policies that are in place, policies that really don't assist people on the ground. the documentation to apply for anything, whether you're applying for funding or you are just applying for a tender, is quite heavy for if it's geared to assist people on the ground. We also have challenges with the land and operational space. We have challenges around the market. We really would like your assistance with regards to procurement in these departments. We believe that we are a center of responsibility and accountability, and should this program be well managed, we will definitely be able to make a difference on the ground. Why also I see that the challenges with departments whereby they give cooperatives projects and cooperatives are unable to service those projects, but if they have a managing company to enroll them for a certain period until they get used to this, then I'm sure we will start seeing the difference. And the incubation program that we have, unfortunately the presentation is not there, but the incubation program that we have also assists them with costing. There's a number of challenges. There's costing challenges on the ground. But then again, because they want to be participating in the economy, they will take projects that are below the margins. And when you try to do costing for them, they are unable to even make 10% of a profit out of those projects. So just to summarize, there are cooperatives out there that are winners. We would like to participate as the SMEs. And we are ready to take on the next challenge. I would like to see the statistics changing because of any way they meet and they put together sets. So, because I'm sure surely they're not going to the right cooperatives. So really would like the department to assist us with land, operational stuff. We need to participate with markets. We are ready to procure. We are ready to be able to participate in the procurement of different departments. So thank you so much.
On that note, I would not waste any further time. I would like to call upon Mrs. Tanwen Kembu to come on the podium and give us her perspective of the King of Midlands and their experiences on the cooperatives that they run. Soon after that, then we will then open up the floor for further engagement, for clarification questions. Honourable Minister, Honourable Members, please bear with us. We're trying to load the presentation on our projector, so we'll be able to project it. In about 30 seconds, we should have it, or we have it now. Thank you.
Greetings to the Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Committee and my fellow delegates. My name is Tanjim Tembo and I'm from the Kings of Midlands. The King of Midlands were founded by Grange and Westgate Taxi Association members in 2004. The King of Midlands was set up to operate as the organisation's falls out again. The King of Midlands was founded by members of Grange and Westgate Taxi Association members in 2004. The organization was set up to be the taxi organization's business wing. It currently has 35 members and is one of 40 taxi associations in Pietermaritzburg. It services commuters from Grange, Slumspruit, Naperville, Mpumalelo, and Nyamazana routes in Pietermaritzburg. Members of Grange and Westgate purchase their vehicles cash, using King of Midlands cooperative, then pay the money back into the co-op. They started by accumulating funds, which happened by having each individual member save 1,000 rand per week for a period of 3 months. The Kings then approached Toyota Harbor and negotiated an exclusive deal to purchase vehicles at cost price. The deal is to purchase 2 vehicles per month from Harbor, and eventually 26 vehicles were purchased from 2004 up until 2006. The problem was that the middleman involved in purchasing taxis drove the price of buying vehicles too high. This resulted in a high number of repossessed vehicles. Taxi owners cannot afford to pay their employees, repair vehicles, or even to pay the installments due. Some of the members of the association could not apply for finance because they had a bad credit history. The solution was to create a stop sale within the taxi association, whereby Grange and Westgate members could save money so vehicles could be purchased cash to avoid the high installments by cutting out the middleman. Members would be able to pay their driver, afford repairs, and keep their businesses afloat. Some of the members that are on credit bureau have since been able to buy more vehicles, resulting in a high income, and were able to pay off their debts. Harper also additionally sponsored a Toyota Taz as a patrol car to assist with the taxis. King of Midlands started by purchasing vehicles from members of the association who had the fewest number of taxis. The association also caps the number of cars an individual owner can have. At that time, it is 4. This is so to bridge the income gap between owners and the association. It has since been increased to 5. So every member of King of Midlands can have an opportunity to benefit from the co-op. The association was divided into groups of 5, with 7 members in each group, and a team leader was assigned to make sure everyone paid the required 1,000 rand per week. When a person's turn to buy a vehicle came along, they received the vehicle and had to pay an installment every month up until the vehicle was paid up. The team leader was the main person responsible in ensuring the payments were adhered to and savings were collected. A standardized payment system was made for every member to pay. That is, everyone paid the same amount every month. All this is done by a verbal agreement. Defaults and payers had their vehicles confiscated, but the driver continued on his routes and cashed the money at the association to the team leader. The team leader then paid the outstanding installment plus a penalty, and the owner was given the rest of the money. This went on up until the loans were finished. Our biggest proposition was to directly approach and deal with the main supplier of taxis in order to cut out the middlemen so the businesses could stay afloat. This would result in less debt and fewer repossessed vehicles, which would also mean a stronger association providing safer vehicles for consumers. The residual effect is a strengthened bond between the association members, including widows and children of deceased owners who previously struggled in the industry. King of Midlands brought the association members together because they were able to support each other during tough times. This strengthened the trust and relationship they have with each other. When owners pass away, the wives and children are able to take over the family business easier and come to the association for help and advice. This is crucial, especially in a male-dominated industry whereby most women are elderly by the time they have to take over the family business. Our market size and potential. France, which is a location consisting of low-cost houses, which was built in recent times along our route, increased our market size and business opportunity, and we added more vehicles to our fleet. Urban populations are constantly growing, which increases the need for transport. If we're able to finance ourselves, we can offer low interest loans to the other sports associations in Pietermaritzburg as well. If we can get financing for transport and storage facility, we would reduce the cost of maintaining vehicles. We'd like to eventually become a shareholder in a tire manufacturing company overseas and open a factory here in South Africa. We would like to own the means of production to produce tires and sell them to the members of the taxi industry at a cheaper rate than what we currently have to purchase them at. We would like to reduce the amount of influence or power that middlemen have and help solve socio-economic problems and create jobs within our community. Grange and Westgate is a pioneer in our industry and is highly influential. We started a school outreach program which was adopted by SANTACO, which is the South African National Taxi Council in Gugulethu's region, and has been adopted by the KZN province as well. We have started showing school uniforms in prison and have supported virtual prison authorities. And hope that with continued support, we will be able to create more children. Grange and Westgate started a stock bill that had to register King of Midlands due to the amount of money it was handling. King of Midlands needs a tire fitment and storage facility, but there's also the need of financing taxi owners and members of the community who do not qualify in terms of the stringent criteria of commercial banks, which required a cooperative bank. This is where King Grange came from. King Grange is a cooperative financial institution which is open to all members of the community. King Grange is registered with the CBDA, which is the Cooperative Banks Development Agency. I have a diagram, but we'll skip it. Our reasons for success. King of Midlands is owned and operated by taxi owners for taxi owners. So there's in-depth knowledge of how to fulfill the needs of its members. There's a constant demand for new taxis because they get run down quickly and the parts are constantly replaced. The government also influences taxi purchases, like when they ask the quantum take over CI vehicles. Another reason for success is that we live and operate in the routes we serve, so we know some of the ways we can help the community. And there are many operators who have credit listing issues, so unlike commercial banks, we will be able to help them. Our way forward. We require funding for a tire fitment and space facility for King of Midlands. We want a place where we can get the parts we need for our vehicles at an inexpensive rate. We would like assistance in finding professionals to help us in our ventures. We understand the need and function for skilled knowledge in business and how it can lead to growth and sustainability. However, skilled professionals are costly, especially for small businesses. There should be some method the government can use to help us in other small businesses in this regard, especially with the high number of unemployed graduates in South Africa. And finally, we'd like to build relationships with various stakeholders and business partners to aid us in moving forward, like partnering up with international tire producing companies first and then finding a way to bring a factory to South Africa to help curb unemployment. Thank you.
Honourable members, thank you so much for that enlightening presentation, but I would like to apologize for the technical glitches that we encountered at the moment. We've called upon a technician to come and assist us. We've been told that he will be coming, but please bear with us, honourable members and colleagues. But anyway, we've had two presentations from Ms. Harriet Ngosi from Ukhozilethu Secondary Cooperative and Mrs. Handiwe Mthembu from King of Midlands. I think in summary, this goes to show that in South Africa there is a wealth of people who are willing to wake up every morning and put in hard work to take the country forward. There is no shortage of ideas, there is no shortage of willingness to work and earn a living. And also it goes to show, if you've listened to the board presentation, that all that is required is financial support and also non-financial support. Innovative ideas are there, creative thinking is there, So all what is required is all the stakeholders to come into the fold and provide some sort of assistance so that we can grow this country forward and achieve what our country, the plan that the country has put in place in the National Development Plan. Having said that, I would like then to open up the floor for 15 minutes for any clarity seeking questions, and then soon after that then we'll take the next presenters that will actually also take us to engaging in deliberations. Any questions?
Okay, my clarity seeking question goes to Ms. Harriet Ngosi. She said when they knock at the door of government, they come across policies that don't assist people on the ground. I would like her to elaborate on that.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so you see a cooperative that's been operational for 2 years, maybe 1 year, with a good business case. And because they have been only operating for a year, they are unable to access certain support simply because they don't show experience or their profile is not good enough for them to be able to get any kind, or not any kind of support, but to have shown a business case. So to me, and as having been engaged with the people on the ground, I've realized that they have skills, they have the know-how, they just lack a business and management skill. So that, I don't think it's fair for them to not access support because of just not being in business for a year.
Honourable Member Charles.
Thank you. Also a question for Harriet Nkosi. I'd like to know whether she thinks there are certain types of businesses that are suitable to becoming a co-op. And if so, what types of businesses are suited to becoming co-ops and what are not suited to becoming co-ops, first of all? And then secondly, what support measures do you think this department should be putting in place to assist secondary cooperatives such as yours to be more effective in the work you do? And then thirdly, in terms of the access to finance and funding, have you had any direct contact with the cooperative bank? And what are the issues that are facing cooperatives when it comes to providing security for funding, where there is common ownership? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chen. I'm not too sure if I got your first question correctly. Which kind of cooperatives are suitable, or which kind of businesses are suitable to become cooperatives? In my experience, I've noted that there's certain cooperatives, for example, sewing cooperatives. These will be cooperatives that have a market already. And also most of the women on the ground, they have experience. They've been working in the firms, so they have experience with sewing. So they are able to come together, utilize their experience to form a cooperative with common ground, on the common ground, and then being able to assist it by Ukozi, and it's easier for us to get market access for them. So those will be cooperatives that I would say they are suitable to become a those are businesses that are suitable to become a cooperative. Like you can have security cooperatives, because we don't have many youth cooperatives in our database. Most of the cooperatives we have are elderly people. These are people who have a certain experience based on where they used to work, so they bring that experience together in forming a cooperative moving forward. Cooperatives, what assistance do we as Ukozi to need to forge ahead? First, we would like We have a middle to long-term plan where we have a cooperative hub, where we will put different cooperatives in the same hub, and they will actually work like a mall where you can just get any service that you need. So us as UKwaZulu, the assistance that we need first, we need, in fact, it's not really for us as UKwaZulu, but for the cooperatives that we're managing. If we could have a big operational space that they can be incubated in, and if we could also have access to leads, to right people that we can talk to, that will actually implement what they say in paper, and use our skill as well to implement everything that is in paper, because it's well said in paper, but when it comes to implementing and actually seeing that happening, it's a challenge. So if we can really have collaborations with your GTIs, with your CIDA and relevant stakeholders, that will help a lot. Cooperative bank, we have not yet we're not in communication with them yet. I was not even aware that there is a bank that may assist cooperatives.
Another check.
I just want to ask a general question. It is not specifically directed to the last two presenters. We have called this workshop as the Portfolio Committee for Small Business and Cooperative Development. And there is a department which is a year old now, called the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development. But I've noticed that in the vocabulary of all the presenters, they are still talking about DTI. The question is, do you see this department as DTI, or you are getting the services that you require from DTI? Because even in the presentation of the minister, in the beginning, she actually explained the mandate of the department. And even when the department was established, it was said that it is a department that is going to focus on development of small, medium and micro enterprises and cooperatives. But since we started this morning, no one is mentioning the Department of Small Business in their presentations. People are mentioning DTI. And I want to understand the reason behind that. I want to simplify my question so that you become relaxed. Is it a question of this department having failed to market itself? Or is it a question of the client base of this department still continuing to receive the same services from the Department of Trade and Industry?
Okay, maybe let me try and see if I can explain that. The Department of SMMEs is not visible on the ground yet. I don't know whether it's because it's only been a year that they've been in operation, but it's not really visible on the ground. Having privilege to work with DTI officials, I was informed about a month ago that it's only now that they are finalizing the department on its own. So the information is quite, it's not clear out there around the Department of SMEs. Well, that's how I see it.
Okay.
Any other
questions? I have said, the question is not only directed to the presenters. I see another hand there.
Honourable Chairperson and other honourable members, maybe just to introduce ourselves, we're newcomers to this whole thing. We are from TFS Solar, and our mandate and how we want to actually react is quite a little bit different. My name is Saki van Wyk. We are busy with a project. Our project is a little bit different. We believe that we are in the power sector, and we visited virtually all the different departments within the context of funding in South Africa. We're having a presentation that we've conducted tomorrow, and one of the main things that we believe that is lacking at the moment in South Africa is most probably coordination of services that is available, that in a core form. We were really impressed with knowing for the first time about a month ago of small enterprises that does exist. So, Honourable Mr. Bingo, I need to just say to you that I think having our first meeting with them last Monday has actually opened a different venue, a different sort of perspective on funding in South Africa, and we hope that if this is directed in the right way and we have coordination. I need to just give you a little bit of insight to link up to Ms. Nkosi. The issue that we've had, we envisage to start, we call it franchises of 3,300 franchises in South Africa. If we can coordinate that into cooperatives and we can actually link that up, guys, we can really open South Africa into a new way of developing small business. And this is what we would like to take forward. Ms. Bengo, from that side, I'm delighted to be here and to see that there is a huge coordination of the whole thing. We like to support as much as we can to take this forward, not just in the small business sector. Guys, the biggest futuristic business, small business center is going to be in Tower in South Africa in the future. Honourable Chairperson.
Sir? Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, sir, for the opportunity. My name is Trevor Chuma from Coa Holdings. And since November, we had the privilege of having a visit from the Portfolio Committee. And I must say we were quite startled to see that there's the Department of Small Business Development now going around the country to actually visit businesses on the ground. And at the same time, we were also impressed with that. But I think the reason to, the question the chairperson is asking is, I think it's quite clear. But, the marketing of the department, in my opinion, I think is lacking in having awareness amongst the cooperatives and the SMEs to know that the department exists. For instance, until a month ago, or about a month ago, the department itself was using emails with DTI still. You see, so it sort of was also confusing, even for the SMEs, because they assisted us in registering a number of cooperatives in KZN. And the email started to come, the correspondence was on DTI emails. But members who are coming from the Department of Small Business. So I think that also caused a bit of was causing confusion, but I was quite pleased to see that recently they are now using DSBT email addresses. So I think marketing to actually let the people who the department is serving, the community, aspiring businesses, the cooperatives, the SMEs, just to have them know that such a department is now existing. It's separate from DTI. These are the services that is offering. CEDA and CIFA are now falling under the department and are no longer under DTI. This is not really clear out there. So I think that could help.
I would, I've only left with a minute. I can only squeeze one last one if there's any other takers. Am I missing any hands? None? Okay. I would really like to close on this particular discussion and then move over to the next presenters on the agenda that we have. I would like to call upon on the podium Mr. Andile Mazwai, Chief Executive Officer of NASASA, to come in and present a model perspective of the National Stockpile Association of South Africa. Ah, thank you, sir. And soon after that, I would also like Mr. Tamanza Shiba to get ready to come after this, and then we will take then clarity-seeking questions for 15 minutes. You have the podium, sir, for the next 15 minutes. If you can try and be brief, we're trying to catch up on time. I'm not trying to squeeze you, but it's time. It doesn't allow us. Cool.
Thank you. Now you can see my true age. I'm unable to operate these talking sticks. It really is a delight to be invited to this workshop. We understand that there are two questions which need to be addressed, and we will address them both. The first one, though, which was not asked, which everybody wants to know, is who is NASASA, or probably more importantly, what is NASASA? NASASA is one idea. It's an irrefutable idea. The idea that when we are together, we achieve more than when we are alone. It's a very compelling idea. Everywhere we've been, no one has challenged us on that. When we are together, we achieve more than when we are alone. This is what binds members to their groups. Now, those groups could be various schemes, there could be grocery buying, investment, party, business, any kind of reason for people to come together. At NASASA, we say, by extension, if you belong to your group because you believe in that one idea, your group should belong to NASASA. NASASA is a group of groups. It is a giant stock firm. From a regulatory perspective, we find ourselves governed by the Reserve Bank. Many years ago, my forebearer and I, still our chairman, Mr. Lukele, had to go to Pretoria to argue a case that stock sales are not unlawful. Technically, as a stock sale collects money from its members, it is a deposit-taking institution. Therefore, it is transgressing the Banks Act. I have no idea how he managed to convince the then Dr. Christoph Governor to allow stock sales to continue, but he did, together with some of the founding members of NASASA. The regulation then is very simple. Every stock sale group enjoys a blanket exemption from the Banks Act on one condition. That is, it is a member of NASASA or any other association approved by the Registrar of Banks in writing. To our knowledge, there aren't any other associations thus approved. There are many associations, but none approved. The way in which we operate is to find a mechanism to allow an interaction between ourselves and our members. Understanding that we are a regulatory organization, an SRO, it's not very compelling to walk into people's living rooms and tell them that I'm your regulator and you must join my organization. Rather, what we do is we say, let us lower the entry for NASASA membership. So to be a member of NASASA, the registration fee is zero. The membership fee is zero. Before we tell you what we can do for you, we are simply saying to you, believe in that one idea and believe that there are many things that we can achieve. Unfortunately, we have been able to achieve quite a few of them. Perhaps the most important one, which answers the first question around communication. we have a need to communicate with our constituency. In order to do that, we have created a 360 platform. We call it 360 because you turn around once, you turn around twice, and you're still facing it. There are two flagship products that we have. The first one is our magazine. We call it Sanke. The problem with people is that they're so proud about their groups. You go to a ladies' grocery club and you tell them they're a society, but you know, we're not a society. You tell a girl group that they're a stock fell. No, we're not a stock fell. The name of the magazine is Sanke, Sishanke. We are all together. It's a lifestyle magazine. It's about ourselves. What we do in it, we tell people the things they want to know. How do I organize my group? How do I make my group grow? What are the do's? What are the don'ts? Oh, our treasurer stole our money. What do you do about that? All those answers can be found in the publication. In the centerfold, we've got a template constitution. Why? Because so many groups get into trouble because they haven't got their constitution together. Again, the magazine is made available to our members free of charge. Our pilot magazine, we went out with 35,000 copies. We've come out now with 50,000. I'm quite ambitious. I really want to be the largest magazine in the country. We're the third largest now. And we're going to push it up to 100,000. Excellent, and you are that strong. The way we deliver the magazine is what is unique. Rather than selling it on the shelf, each copy of the magazine is delivered by hand to our members by an employee of NASASA. And that's important because it creates the opportunity for a dialogue. A stock fund is an instance. I'm sure many members of this house belong to stock cells. Yet if I were to speak to you about your stock cell now, you'll say you can't talk to me about that because firstly, you're not in your group. You don't have a mandate. And whatever idea I might give you now, you forget by the time you get to your group. So I must find you when you are in your group. So our agents are in all the major townships, certainly in Gauteng, we must go national. We either deliver the magazine to your door, or we come to the group. And it creates a fantastic platform for us to then engage. Now, if everything is free in NASASA, how on earth do we pay our life and water? Our revenues are made up by corporate marketing. We'll go to corporates who want to see stock sales, and the numbers are staggering. There are 800,000 stock sale groups in South Africa. They've got 50 billion rand hidden somewhere, whether in bank accounts or under the mattresses. The corporates want to talk to them. We've got a communication mechanism to allow it to happen. We take their marketing budget and we make our platform available to our members. So we keep it very easy in terms of dialogue. When we meet our members, we are not selling them anything. And it's very important. It allows us to do all sorts of campaigns. The one that I really enjoyed, one of our corporate accounts wanted to distribute a new tea, which they really believe stock sales would love. He said, sure, we'll take on the project. How many tea bags? 2 million. How many? 2 million tea bags. And I'm glad to say that we're able to do it. Packed in tents. Our agents on the ground, they've got mobile technology, they've got geotagging, they visit, the call center sets up their appointments with the group. They get in there, they deliver the tea, they deliver the magazines, they take photographs, it goes back to the call center. We know that the goods were delivered, they weren't lost or sold somewhere along the way. So we're really excited about this. So when we read that one of the challenges that people have with regard to addressing or engaging DFIs is that they don't know where they are. Even ourselves, we find different departments within DTI, and they'll come to us and they'll say to us, how can we get our message out to your constituency? We've now registered 110,000 members. These are the groups that we have at NASASA. With 110,000 groups, which is approximately 1.6 million people, so we do have a considerable reach. And we're here today. You'll forgive me, Madam Chairman, if it sounds a little bit like I'm selling my services, but we make ourselves available to say, for any DFI that has a message to get out there, we have the mechanism to do it. And it's quite exciting the way we do it. We've got our own mobile app. If you have a call to action, we are there on the ground. We can get people. We can mobilize them. The other product that we have, which I'm also very excited about, is our Stokvel Indaba. You can't just press a button in your office and suddenly 1.6 million people respond. You have to get out to people. And we've been on the road. We do it once, sometimes twice a month.
We've been to Soshanguve, Astridgeville, Mamelodi, when Alex this weekend, Soweto, Katlehong, I can't even remember most of the places we've been to. And the format is the same. We get there, we take the town hall, we fill it between 400 and 600 groups, and we talk to them about the one idea. And it's a compelling idea. And that is how we then get our membership. It's also a fantastic way for people who want to engage Stockwell to go and talk to them. We know how to mobilize. If you want a group, if you want a hall filled with people who are interested in investments, we can do that. You want a group filled with people who are interested in X, Y, and Z, we've got the database and the manpower to go ahead and mobilize that. That's enough selling of NASASA. We're here for you. The second question is really fun. Now, the second question is really important. This one we did because we just simply refuse to accept the idea that our people can be that bad when it comes to credit. It's impossible. Anybody lending money will tell you that, local South Africans, bad credit record, blacklisted. But unfortunately, numbers don't lie. We took our projects to the mobile telephone industry because what you see, you will not believe. Everybody has access to airtime. I'm not going to teach you anything new. But there are two ways to access airtime. You can either pay upfront and then talk, or you can talk and then promise to pay. Who should get the better deal? The one who pays upfront or the one who promises to pay? Not difficult, man. Even I understand that. But what's the reality? The reality is that the person who promises to pay gets a better deal by an order of magnitude of 2.5 times. 100 rand a month on prepaid. If you had a contract, you would be deriving up to 250 rand of value. Now, I'm not here to pick a fight with any mobile operator. They're free to set their prices as they would. Rather, our constituencies are members, and we say to them, easy. If they're prepaid, don't even change your service provider. Just go back to the very same operator and say, I want a contract. And why not? Now the operator says, no, hold on. It's not that easy. You see, now I'm extending credit, and I need to establish two things. Firstly, do you have the means to pay me back? Number two, do you mean to pay me back? Now that's valid. And the operator says, I just need 4 documents, please, to help me ascertain the answer to that question. Document number one, I want a 3-month bank statement, I want a proof of residence, I want a payslip, and I want your proof of residence. Not so easy. That automatically disqualifies the majority of South Africans. The majority of people in South Africa cannot produce those 4 documents on demand. Now we argue with these fellows and say, where's the real risk? We might come to that. Instead of NASASA, we said, surely the answer to those questions can be found in another place. Not only in those 4 documents. Surely they are not imperfect. I might have a fancy job, but does it state that I'm on my final written warning on my payslip? No, it doesn't. It's not imperfect. Or it's not perfect. Instead, we went and looked within the Stockwell itself and said, we think the answer to those questions lies in Stockwell. Now, there's a fellow in Bangladesh by the name of Muhammad Yunus. You may have know of him. He won a Nobel Prize together with his bank Gamoon for the work that he did in this kind of financing. And he has a very important quote, which is to say that poor people don't create poverty. We do. When we demand those 4 documents, we are excluding people. But there's another way to find the answer. This is what we've done. We did it as a pilot, and I'm here today to share with you the results of that pilot exercise. We went to people in their groups and said, we've got a different deal for you.
we think you could move yourself from prepaid to postpaid, but please don't spend any more money. In fact, if you're spending 100 a month, take a 50 rand contract. You're already better off and you're saving yourself money. Don't extend yourself. Don't go for these shanty things. Just go with what you can afford. And we will ascertain the answer to those questions from the group itself. I belong to a group. They know me. Ah, almost right. You think he's got money? You, he doesn't pay. My group knows that. My group knows that. And if we were just brave enough at Nasasa to trust the group, which we were, then surely we can extend those 24-month contracts to all the members of the group that the group says qualify. And they asked us. They say, but am I, what if I'm blacklisted? We say, are you blacklisted in your group? If you're not blacklisted in your group, then surely you qualify. We limited our pilots to 1,000 contracts. We started in April of last year. When we received the applications, even we're a little bit nervous. To date, we have not had one, not one default. And it demonstrates that the power of the collective is greater than the power of the individual. On my own, I cannot qualify for credit. But when my group stands behind me, using positive economics, not negative, we don't threaten to blacklist anyone. We've got no credit collectors. Instead, if a member doesn't pay, we send a polite SMS to say, Mr. Mazwai, you haven't paid your cell phone. We're not going to shut you off. What for? If you don't have 100 rand in your bank account and I shut you off, how am I helping you get the 100 rand? We send you a polite message. And only a week later, if you haven't rectified it, we send you a second message, which goes to the chairman of the group too, to say, you still haven't paid. Can you please just sort this out? We are getting, you know, a little bit uncomfortable now. And we give the chairman a week to talk to the fellow, because the chairman knows whether he needs to be whispered to or shouted at. We don't know. Only in the third week, if nothing has happened, we then send a message to the entire group, reminding them that if they don't sort out the thing, the rebate that is paid in cash to the group account is going to be forfeited. We have not had one default, because there's nobody who wants to walk into the stock for a meeting and be that person who costs the group cash that would have come into their bank account. These are the lessons that we have learned, Madam Chairman. I'm happy that we are able to share them. We do a lot more than that at Nasasa. We're asked to answer two questions. I hope we've answered them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mazwai, for that information, informative presentation. I would, without wasting any further time, I would like to call upon Paman Rashiba to come to the podium and give us a presentation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, are you going to do it alone? So, yeah. Your name?
Mwato. Dakalo.
In the coming to the podium to represent model perspective of the Wealth Hub, it's in the place of Mr. Paman Rashiba, Ms. Mwato Dakalo. She's going to give us a presentation. And then soon after that, then we'll take engagements for about 15 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. My Minister, thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for giving us this opportunity. I think our presentation is going to be mounted, but I'm very happy that we are presenting after Nasasa, because we take ourselves to be one example of what may be part of a bigger picture. All what we are requesting from you is guidance, because of what we feel and we see as a potential for Stockfels to to contribute towards funding small businesses and other ventures. We are from the World Hub. My name is Nwato, as they've already said. The concept of the World Hub is not only the money, the wealth of money, but it is a multidisciplinary kind of wealth. We're looking at personal wealth, we're looking at financial wealth, we're looking at educational wealth, we're looking at the wealth that are out there that can be able to deal with the different poverties that our nation is facing. We say to ourselves that we exist because of certain reasons. That's where we start. We say our purpose because our is it okay? The next slide, please, Matthew.
You can continue, okay.
That's the purpose of the existence of the World Hub. To build a world, a world where disempowered people determine their own empowerment agenda through helping and uplifting one another. That's the beyond life kind of vision that we are looking at. And we are using the concept and the spirit of people helping other people, the spirit of the Stockwell, to say that our vision is for all the people to help each other so that we can be able to achieve our dreams. Our mission is to be the platform in Africa that will rekindle that ethos of Ubuntu or of people helping one another. What we do is we create opportunities where there were no opportunities. We educate and uplift our communities. We facilitate relationships building, because if you are in a stockpile, when I grew up in a small village, the term that I got used to was Sitamo, because it binds you, as Mr. Mazai has said. You are bound to a group that has a common vision and a common dream. And that is based on trust. People trust each other so that they can be able to help each other. But also in that process, we facilitate relationship building. We mobilize people to help each other. So we'd like to be seen as an example of a stock cell that is taking stock cell concept to a different level. And it is still a new business. It is we started in February. We still are looking for ideas. We have our own challenges that we may not discuss here, but let's look at the potential that could be there in the idea that we are having. Our business model is into branches or two complementary businesses. They are very, very old concepts. There's nothing new about the network business. There's nothing new about the stock sale. We just took the two and said the two can complement each other. Because we know that the network business, but in our case, we have used the network business as a business where we develop new entrepreneurs. As we develop individual business owners, we also instill in them a feeling of I can grow, I can be my own business, I can look at other businesses beyond a network business. But we have taken that old concept and we are saying we repackage it so that it can be used as a step towards one being effective when they are in a stock sale. We know that a network business provides passive sustained income. We know that if that income is not used properly, it will not be sustainable. But we instill the discipline of business development. We started there and that's where our platform for business training starts. Before we even go into Stockwell, we started the network in February. It went well. By the time we launched the Stockwell in May,
all our independent business owners from the network were already well trained to be able to use the money that comes in through the stock sale in their businesses. It's an online stock sale, and we, as you said, we use the principle of people helping other people. We did not have to raise funds from elsewhere to start the business. We use the very concept of people helping people to start the stock sale. We won't be proceeding with the presentation. It will end there. We are looking at three groups of people that we want to target with our stock sale. We are looking at higher education institutions or higher education students to say, how can we develop the stock sale concept for our youth to self-fund their education in higher education, and by the time they graduate, they at least have something to start life with in terms of looking for a job or starting their own businesses. But also we are looking at communities to say, how can we use the stock sale ethos, the stock sale idea for communities to continue and also make the concept even more sophisticated and more broader than it is now, so that it can be recognized by all institutions internationally, so that our families can be able to put bread on the table, so that people that do not have jobs can at least benefit from helping each other, so that they can start their own businesses or they can look after their families. We are also looking at small businesses to say, how can, while waiting for government to provide funding, can small businesses start to help each other to start and to gain experience and to gain the confidence, so that other funders, when they decide to fund them, they can fund them already mature. They can find them already having gone two steps ahead, because that confidence also will give them other funders the courage to fund small businesses through the stock sale concept. So Mr. Mazaru will be knocking at your door. We have once, but we will be coming back to say, give us advice. How do we take this idea forward? Because we feel that our tradition and our culture are very, very strong, and we do not use them to the benefit of our small businesses, such that we can help each other. In my language, we say, we put in this dish so that you can be able to fund a taxi. We put it in a dish so that you can be able to take your child to school. So we are a very, very young company, but we would like to work with everyone to say, as South Africans, as Africans, as the stock sale concept is a very, very powerful one. Let's not let it go. Let's grow it. Let's work together. And if you have already a regulatory body such as NASASA, let's make use of it for ideas, but also from the house at large. That's what we are doing in the World Hub, to try to let's help each other so that we can progress, whether you are in higher education, whether you are in business, or whether you are in a community, whether rural or urban. Chair, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Ngwato. Over to you, Chair, if there's a point that you would like to make.
Thank you. You would have noticed that the two presenters have not talked about how they went to government departments or CIFA or CIDA to borrow money for their members. They didn't talk about that. That is the difference.
And the reason for us to invite them here is that what was presented and to us in the past in relation to the risk posed by small businesses and cooperatives in terms of finance is what they are not talking about. They are not talking about the risk of giving loans, of doing business with us, of us. Oh, Mr. Maswai is saying that we have not helped defaulters. And when a person has defaulted, we have needs of ensuring that that situation is corrected. The reason for us to invite the stock fair is that we live in South Africa. And South Africa has got two types of societies. A society that was oppressed and could not access services, particularly loans from banks. Black South Africans, the majority of small businesses are black people. And the target group of this department is poor black people, some of them who don't even have bank accounts, who have never seen a bank. Those who have cards to access money have got SASSA cards because they depend on social grants. That is the target group that we are talking about. And in the eyes of a commercial bank, that person is a risk. Even if that person had a very good business idea. Poverty has put that person at, has made that person to be seen as a risk. A similar situation that happened to the taxi industry. People who started the taxi industry used their pension. Most of them were people that were retrenched from work. And they would take that money and go and buy a taxi. Most of the small businesses, Agushomin, which is located in South Africa, are self-funded. The spaza shops are self-funded. Street vendors, self-funded. Every month old, okay, I used my pension. Started with my own money. Now, we are talking about the funding instruments. The relevance of funding instruments that we have to the target group. The people that we saw at Chipingo with selling fruits and bananas on top of cold drink trays, crates and a plank covered with a plastic thing, and then we put the fruits on top of that. That is what I want us to discuss. And if Ntombi has got a master's degree in business and is standing here and saying it's very complicated to fill up that application form, then we have Maswai standing up here and saying, because now I belong to a stock firm, and some of the members that say I am in a stock firm with are illiterate, people who can't read and write. Which is the best instrument? Who knows the culture of the target group that we are supposed to be serving? Who knows the culture better of the people that we are supposed to serve? Between NASASA and an intermediary, I want to repeat the question. Who knows the culture of the people that we are supposed to serve? Between NASASA and an intermediary. Intermediary, umasho nisa. And a fund manager that does not belong to a stock firm, doesn't know how a stock firm works. But that fund manager has to make a decision of whether to fund Ukomo. He's been standing here, Ukomo. I want us now to engage and Sivule is Fuba. Let's talk. When we talk, we shouldn't be talking about the police. Let's talk as if it's no police. When we talk, let's just talk as if there is no act. Let's talk about the real situation and how that situation needs to be addressed. That is where we are now. We have listened to people presenting, the people that are receiving the services. There is not a single entity that was presented today, and we did that purposely. But let today be the day of the people whose services are designed for. Let them talk. So that we can arrive at a point where we are able to change if we see a need to change. And if we think that there is nothing wrong, we continue to do the things the way we have been doing them. Even though the people that those services are designed for have told us what they have said today. Let's talk now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and honourable Minister, honourable members, colleagues, and our stakeholders, I think we've actually, as honourable Chair has actually opened up the next item on the program. But before we do that, I've been told that we can quickly grab a coffee outside to prime our throats for the deliberations that we're going to have. There are scones and coffee, so we can grab and then come back in so we can continue this discussion. I can see we've tried very hard to manage the time. At 6 o'clock, we should be able to leave the house. And also one last request. In our deliberations, please, let's straight to the point. Even if you want to provide a bit of a background, just keep it 30 seconds and hit the issue on the head. And be very straight and concise points that you want to make. But we can quickly just run outside, grab a cup of coffee, come back in, tea, scones, then we can recharge our batteries so then we can get back to the agenda of the day. Can I just give it 2 minutes?
Leg stretch. Yeah, 2 minutes leg stretch. Or make it five. Leg stretch, grab a coffee, come back. Honourable Minister, honourable members, welcome back once again. I think now we've come to that point of the agenda where we then open up the deliberations. After we have had an opportunity to listen to a number of presenters coming to the podium to give us their own perspective, their own experiences in starting up and running their own businesses, what sort of challenges they faced in their endeavors to try and contribute towards the upliftment of our country and also addressing our triple challenges, which is unemployment, inequality, and poverty alleviation. So our presenters have come to the podium, they've highlighted quite a few challenges, and just in summary to highlight quite a few challenges that actually have come out strongly from the presenters that have come here in front to give us their own perspective. The issue of lack of awareness. The awareness of the institutions or the instruments that are out there that are meant to assist the SMEs and the cooperatives. The lack of awareness of the department, and I'm also piggybacking on the question that Honourable Chair asked before we left for coffee. And also, some of the challenges that the presenters have highlighted is the issue of the undefined criteria in terms of, as an SME or as a cooperative, it would actually assist if you know upfront what sort of criteria these funding institutions or the DFIs, what sort of criteria do they use to assess the applications. For you to know upfront before you submit your application, and also it would actually assist for you as an SME or as a cooperative to know upfront if you are directing your application to the right institution, because as an organization, if you're starting out, time wasting is a commodity that you cannot afford. Every time that you have, you want to put it in investing in your business, making sure that you build your business from strength to strength. And also, lack of trust. Nelson Kunu highlighted that the lack of trust from the funders and the SME, going behind your back, talking to your clients without you knowing. That's an issue that we also need to look at. Non-financial support in terms of making sure that we upskill this. Mr. Como highlighted the issue of some of the institutions looking for accounts, cost of accounts. That non-financial support is required. How then do we address that issue? How do we tap into what was highlighted by State South Africa in terms of the high level of unemployment by the university or technical graduates who have the skills, who have the qualifications that can assist these SMEs and cooperatives in making sure that they comply. What Ms. Harriet
she's doing in assisting cooperatives with financial management, business skills, making sure that they get the necessary funding. We need to, these deliberations, we need to look at all those issues. How do we close these gaps? We need to think creatively, innovatively, how do we close the gap? Because I think we are all here with a goal in mind to make sure that we take our country forward, we create employment, we upskill our young people, we create jobs, we put food on the table, we gap the inequality gap that we have in our country, the two economies that we currently have. I think on that note, there's quite a few, a long list of challenges that have been highlighted, the issues of NYDA. Also, in summary, just the coordination of all the, I may have forgotten your name, but the issue of coordination, because the institutions are there to fund these, the starting up, the SMEs and the cooperatives. But then, how then do we coordinate all of those efforts to make sure that they're effective and efficient, and they're benefiting the clients, the people that are the beneficiaries that are aimed at? And on that note, I would like to open up the floor. I'm not too sure, Madam Chair, if you would like to add anything on that. I would...
No.
Okay. I will then open up the floor. Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, well, our main reason for being here really is just to continue listening, because the people that are important in this meeting today are the small businesses and cooperatives. The last presenter from Model Perspective of World Hub, Mr. Spamanza is not here, but of course the rep is here. I would like them to at least put this committee at ease, because I just feel that there are some regulatory issues that they are going under right now. And what I wouldn't want is for the committee to be settled or be burdened with some discussions by the media or anybody else who knows that there is an issue around them. I thought that when the presenter was presenting, she would go further in terms of the presentation that she made, but she stopped it somewhere along the line. And I know that as a matter of principle, of course, the committee would advertise, and anybody who wants to come here can come, because it's an open, it's a public discussion. But considering the space in which we are in, and also one, I'm saying this with respect also, they mustn't think that I'm putting them on the spot. It's just that this is a public meeting. It would have been good for them to say, yes, we are here, we have come to explain ourselves, we've come to put our program, but we want the committee also to be aware that we are going through certain challenges which, as far as they are concerned, they have made the confidence that they're going to, because you see, this is a public thing, it's been in the papers over and over about them. And so I just felt that if the committee was not aware, or the chairperson wasn't aware of that, it might not be fair if it comes out later that they have these issues and it's like the portfolio committee just didn't bother about those issues and invited them. But of course I do believe in the constitution that, you know, we are proven innocent until somebody else says something different. But we know the space in which we are finding ourselves in. I think it would be good if the person that made the presentation does at least give the committee that, yes, we have this issue, but we are dealing with it, we are comfortable with it, so that it doesn't get out and be blown in out of proportion from a point of view of them having been allowed to come and make a presentation to the committee. Thank you, Chair. If the chairperson and other members feel comfortable with that, if they think it's fine, I'm okay with that.
Honourable Chair.
Thanks. No. I wasn't even aware of what are the issues. And also the last group that made the presentation, is the one that approached the committee secretary on its own one to come and present. It was not an invited group, and we could not say no, because I didn't make a decision on those people that approached the committee secretary. You can also explain.
I'm not sure if Ms. Nkwato Takalo Sisto N, you would like to get an opportunity to respond. Okay, cool. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Minister. We requested to come and do the presentation and a presentation for the idea that we have, because we see the potential of what our business does as something that can contribute to the multiple poverties that are out there in our society. Yes, we are a registered company, and I think our business model might be... Okay, let me start by saying, yes, we are a registered company. We run a stock sale and a network business. Those are two different businesses that have been brought together. We started with the network in February, and we started with the stock sale in May. 2 days after we started, our banking account got shut down, and we could not operate. The concern was the administrative fee that we were requesting from members so that we can be able to run the business. But because it's an online business, the people had already understood the system that the business is running. I have to confirm that the AFU is investigating the business. We are cooperating with all the authorities that have concerns and questions about our business, including the Reserve Bank. Our lawyers are having a meeting with all these authorities that are active and are involved on the 28th of this month in Johannesburg. Our approach is, tell us where we went wrong. We are prepared to correct. We are prepared to abide by all the laws, all the rules, all the regulations. And we want to work under all the regulations and the laws that are governing the country. Our vision, our quest is to contribute to all the institutions that want to uplift our communities. Our quest is to say where others stop and there is still a gap, we would like to contribute and fill the gap. If, for example, a small business is questioned for to say that you don't have the skills, we don't have the confidence in you, we are saying, can't we use a stock sale concept where small businesses help each other to go ahead? Thanks.
Can you stop there?
Thanks.
Can you stop there? Can you switch off your mic? Sorry.
Can you switch off your mic?
I think that it was unfair for you to ask to come in and make a presentation here when your business model is being questioned.
Because this channel, the proceedings of this committee are watched under channel 408.
whatever we are discussing here is actually being listened to. And it gets repeated. Now, if you are under a cloud, your business model is being questioned and your accounts are frozen, and we have not invited your organization and you then write to us and ask to come and make a presentation, it's actually ambush marketing. You are marketing your services which are being questioned. And I don't think that it was the right thing to do. You should have waited until you are cleared and then come and present to us whatever services you are offering. To come and present the services of your company which are being questioned is misleading the nation, because there are people who are actually going to continue coming to you because they have seen you presenting here. I think your organization owes us an apology. And we also to withdraw your presentation and not even discuss it in this meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Would like to apologize. It was not an intention to do what we have done. We thought that they would get ideas that this concept that we grew up.
Your concept is being questioned. Your behavior is being questioned. That is the issue.
We apologize.
You can't come here and market what is being questioned and present to us something that is being questioned as if there's nothing wrong. So, my take on this would be, we withdraw your presentation and you also excuse yourself from the meeting. We cannot discuss business ideas that are being questioned.
Thank you.
Okay. I would like then to open up the floor for discussion, for everything that we've had today, all the challenges, let's come up with innovative ideas, creative ideas, how do we close the gap, how do we address these challenges. This deliberations are open to everyone, to we encourage each and every participant in this meeting, to in this workshop, to participate in this deliberation. But we do also request that you keep your points very straight, 30 seconds, if you may. If we cut you short, it's not because we're rude, it's because we're looking at the time and we're trying to make sure that we allow people that are still have to fly out to catch their flights, and those that need to drive back home to still do that. The floor is open for any point. Honourable Chair.
Thank you. I'd like to just examine the question around what makes Stockville historically successful in this country, whereas historically most cooperatives have not been successful. And I think one needs to fully understand that a Stockville essentially is a savings institution. It's for savings. It's for savings and spending, with a little bit of earned income possibly from interest, but very, very rarely, because most Stockvilles don't put their money in the bank. They keep it out of bed. So actually, it's a savings. It's a mechanism for saving and spending. Whereas a cooperative is essentially is a productive enterprise. Its purpose in life is to produce things for a profit, even though that profit may be circulated amongst the members. And I just would like us to start to begin an examination of what is it about one that makes it work and the other one doesn't. What happens when money starts to be made in amongst people? Do they start to argue? Do they start to get jealous of each other? Is it a matter of, you know, not knowing how to manage the money that is being made? What is the cultural thing that is holding it back from being successful? I'm interested in the comments that was made, that were made by Mr. Mazwai about the loans to the Stockvels, and the Grameen Bank is an extremely successful bank. We have got an example of it in the country, the microfinance organization, which is based in Jenin. But it's a very small-scale operation, and it hasn't really been replicated. And any attempts by SIFA to do similar things through the micro, through the financiers, the intermediaries, has not succeeded. And I think the point that the chair made earlier about what is the difference between the Stockvel or Nasasa and the micro and the intermediary is a very important question, because it goes to the heart of the cultural, the understanding of what, you know, drives an organization, and why does one organization pay its bills back, pay the loan back, and others don't. So in order for us to start to tackle the bottom of the pyramid, and I use the word pyramid advisedly in view of what we've just heard, in order to tackle the bottom of the pyramid, we have to find mechanisms through which we can direct funding and know that we're going to get the money back with interest, you know. And that's a question I think we need to understand. Again, interrogating what is the nature of a small business and a cooperative, and what are the learnings that we can take from the Stockvels industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. You may. Let me take three questions, and then we can, if there are any questions, then we can allow for answers. Yes, you may.
Thank you. This is a privilege we normally don't enjoy. So let me enjoy it. I agree with Honorable Chance. I think the chairperson's question is a powerful one, and I want to take it a step further and ask maybe someone from the DFIs, Chatham House rules, you know, no policy obtaining. Can we get an answer to that question? What fundamentally would be different from the Nasasa versus an intermediary if Nasasa were to perform the same function? Is that even viable? If we can get an answer to that question.
Any other follow-up before I... You're raising your hand, sir? Not. Okay, cool. Okay.
Maybe let us open the discussion and talk.
Open.
Not as a... officials from the department, political advisors for the minister, or let's just talk as people. Let's talk as people who are faced with a problem. Because all of us seated here, we have a responsibility of finding a solution. And the problem that we are faced with is lack of access to funding by small businesses and cooperatives. And then they have given a list of reasons. And then we are now coming to comparisons. The question that I'm asking and Honorable Chance is asking, let us compare intermediaries to Nasasa. Let's open up and talk.
Mr. Mazwai.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
The next one will be Philip Zondi.
And Mr. Philip Zondi.
We must be careful to not think that Masasa has the answers to all questions. The pilot that we performed does have its limitations. The amounts that we were talking about are small. So relative to what a member will contribute to a stock fund, which is anywhere between 100 and 600 rand a month, typically, a phone bill fits that sort of size, so that the group is prepared to take on the challenge if a member has a problem. It would be different, for example, if you were to try and do it for a home loan, where a person now has to pay a bond of 2, 3, 5,000, and if there's a problem, then you have to go to the stock fund. So there are those limitations. The big example, or the big lesson that I think we've learned, is the idea of behavior. The current credit models are very quick to label people as good, bad, or ugly. What we've discovered is that people's behavior is contextual. When you see me on a Saturday night, you won't believe the same person that you see now. In a certain context, I choose to behave well. In another context, you'll be dismayed by my behavior. What we find within a stock fund is that it is a place where people choose to behave well. And for as long as that stock fund is functional, then it has the authority, the moral authority, to then police the behavior of its members. And that's what I think is an important lesson and that we want to share with the DFIs. When you're looking to police how people are behaving with the monies that are given to them, don't just rely on conventional methods, because people may be immune to being blacklisted. Once you're on the floor, you can't fall off. But there are other pain points that people do respond to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Madam Chairman.
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. The difficulties that I always find for the people to be difficult to be funded, you find that the forms that they need to fill, it's quite difficult. They can't even read it. He goes and gets the forms. The man who reaches home said, no, I can't fill this thing. Because it's for friendly people. How can we simplify it? Because the people that form this form are the people who are highly educated. Now that person who says apples there in the market won't be able to fill that form. Now at the end of the day, you find that if that person can't fill the form, he's going to call a child, the social media, don't get me involved. That's the end of it. You find that some of the people, they don't even explain to the other people what are the necessities that are needed to fill in the form to ask for funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you. One of the things that I find with the stock file, which could be implemented in the small business sector, is that a stock file is a communal, and there's a social and support element to it. And with entrepreneurs, you work, we literally live and breathe business and play business. So there's no time where you get together, there's not a lot of women you get together with other entrepreneurs and discuss ideas and how can you move around this and ideas of how other people have overcome challenges. There are networks that are out there, but often entrepreneurs don't even find time to go and network. So I think, I don't know, I mean, with some of my friends, we've actually started some sort of a platform which we call peer mentoring, where we actually discuss and talk about things that we don't even are not brave enough to share it with our families, because as an entrepreneur you are sometimes expected to put in front of your staff and in front of your family. You can't really break down. So a sort of a community that is a where you can be real and have a platform where you can actually talk about real problems and how you can solve them. I think that's an element that the stock fell offers. Yeah.
Yes, sir. And then I'll take Mr. Komo, you had your hand up? Okay, I'll take you after. And the guy writes the third one. Next.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, like the speaker said, that the stock firms, they have a system of accountability, of internal discipline. And on the cooperatives and the SMEs, from our experience, because we've also run a 2.5-year pilot to test the theories that we have been trying out. And as we are all saying here, that the cooperatives don't have funding application experience. They are not business people. They are aspiring business people. So they don't have experience in how do you apply for funding. And they don't have experience or technical know-how in the area of expertise, whether it's agriculture, whether it's whatever the industry. You find that they're not coming with a wealth of experience from before, from somewhere. So I think, you know, to answer Mr. Chan, this is why a lot of corporations are failing. And there's no one, if you look at the GFIs, they don't have instruments or services where they can mitigate this challenge with the cooperatives and the SMEs. So you almost need a NASASA-like approach to service these shortcomings of the SMEs. And what we have done, we have decided to take it upon ourselves as Core Holdings to be that expert. And we have brought in chartered accountants who understand the development finance approach. We have brought in experts who know that CIFA has got a budget of X amount. CIFA, their approach is they've got 30 billion limits, 30 to 60 million limits, and then up to 100 million if it is wholesale funding. People who understand the finance and the things the cooperatives don't understand. And we have decided that we will stand with those cooperatives for 5 years and play that role at our cost. And for the last 2.5 years, we spent 5.5 million of our own money trying out this pilot. And we have now found success that's measured by retail business, where MassMart has come and the board of MassMart, through the intervention, I must say, of the Small Business Development Portfolio Committee. And so the approach has now been approved by MassMart, by Pick and Pay, by Fruit and Veg City, and it is working. So what I'm saying is, I think that the solution is an integrated approach so that the cooperatives can work. We need to work together with the ministry, with the department, with the GFIs, with the experts like NASASA and the other lady, sorry, I forgot your name, ma'am. The services that they bring to mitigate these shortcomings of the corporates, I think then we'll start to see the corporates working as we are now seeing our pilot working. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. A question was raised, I think, by Mr. Chancellor, which are the types of cooperatives that work as opposed to many that don't work? From our experience on the ground, and it relates to the model of the stock sale, in a stock sale you have an individual who has a particular interest to invest his money, and at the end of the year or so, is going to get a return on that money. If he does not continually do what he's supposed to do, pay his premium, then he automatically falls off. It means he's sabotaging himself. So when I go back to our field of expertise in the area of agriculture, when you have a number of farmers who say we will bring our products to one place, and that product will be an offtake of the product from one place to the market, then each farmer has a responsibility to make sure that he produces the product and in quality so that it qualifies to be brought to the central point and offtaken, I can say it that way. If it does not, If you don't bring the produce, then you're not going to get paid anything, because you are paid according to what you bring in. So whether then it's a matter of saying that central point is the cooperative, maybe we may name it a secondary cooperative perhaps, and then these individuals, we say those are co-ops or individual farmers. But the point being, at that central point where they bring is where the whole endeavor is. When you do what you're supposed to do, then you'll get the returns as expected. So when you don't, then you don't get it as expected. So now the question then is, who is better to fund? Who do you deal with? Who is more responsible? The central point or the individual? When it comes to compliance and access to funding, where there is a central point, you may have a lot of resources there in terms of skills. Those people may be able to put all those documentation and compliance documentation as that co-op to actually apply, as a central co-op to actually apply for finance and meet the criteria. They have production from the different farmers, but however, the farmers on the ground, because yes, I like when just before the end of our last session, I think Mam Bengu brought it back, let us remember who are we here to talk about. We are not here to talk about the developed. We are here to talk about the undeveloped and the developing, the people who have the lack, who don't have those skills, who are illiterate. So now then we look at the funding structure. I think the key thing then is compliance. Because now you may have a situation where there is an offtake agreement by the central co-op, but on the ground the farmers themselves, they need to be funded. So, So I want to say, just as being experienced on the ground, I think then the key thing, the ideal situation for us will be in terms of making criteria or the compliance to get funding much simpler. Because what we need then, when departments come together, an approach where all the departments come and play into channel their resources. We get a skills development ideally from the relevant sector, access to market, which again I mentioned when I was out of time, that the issue of access to market, particularly in government, has to be reserved for the SMEs, their only chance. You give them that access to market, and a directive must be given, a clear, conscious directive that this must happen on the ground. Because it's a problem to get even what the OH, Department of Health or Correctional Services to supply them. They'll tell you there's the big, this big agency they're supplying. And you, a local producer, we cannot have your produce procured and used in your local area. Time is up. But then yes, so skills development, access to that market must be secured, and then the access to funding, the criteria, quickly, can I just quickly, on the criteria?
If you ask, can I interject?
Yes, ma'am.
We have 3 days to discuss. Right now, we are answering the question, what is the difference between what makes a stock firm to be successful and what makes it different from an intermediary? And what is the difference between a stock firm and a cooperative? That is what we are discussing right now. All other things that you are talking about, we are still going to have time to discuss. Let's stick to that question.
Madam.
I think on the, or it can from the NDA, but I think on the comments of Umam Bingu, maybe let's pass, you then raise the issues that I wanted to raise at another time.
Thank you. May I just allow one or two? And then maybe we can also, so then you don't lose sight of the other points on the...
Okay.
You also say. After the Madam Chair, then we can take you.
Cool.
Okay. Rick.
Thanks. Uvukile Ngabinde, ukuzama nje to input on the stokvel and the cooperative. I think one of the characteristics is that at some stage the stokvel, I think, is more almost like an organic cooperative. You know, there are these binding things that organically people voluntarily also come together, you know, whether with that vision, whether it's a return or it's a buying group, and all of that. And with some cooperatives, you find that let's put them together to be a cooperative. Let's put them together to be a cooperative so that they can access the market. They don't know each other and so on. Because now there is that opportunity, then people are assembled together to form this cooperative, and then at the beginning they just then go and register. Then organizational development work is not done, group dynamics work are not done yet at the beginning, so that these guys can really bond and understand what is the mandate of each person in that space. You see. So I think because when most of us, either maybe people, we say we study together or we are trading together or we are selling, we are taverners together and so on. There is this thing that organically binds us together. And then, well, I've been repetitive, but most cooperatives, the challenge is that they are being put together, those people, wherever they are. So it does not happen organically. You can transform a lot of stock firms to be a business people and cooperatives, you see magic there, because there is energy already that exists in that space that can be turned to say, if we are these puzzle shop people, we have seen each other, we are trading, now we can move to a level of owning a wholesaler now, in a distribution center and things like those, because there's some energy that we've built together before things.
Yes. I just wanted to come in there, and it's good that I'm speaking after the last bit. There are a lot of similarities between a stock sale and a cooperative. A stock sale is a solidarity-based association. It's people that have a common goal, and they are fighting a common problem. So they come together in a stock fair. Stock fair is, some of the stock fairs are for burial purposes. It's people that cannot afford to take insurance. And then, or the insurances do not meet their needs, and then they put their resources together to actually address death-related needs as a collective, because it's difficult to address those needs as an individual. That is what a stock sale is. So a stock sale doesn't start by wanting to make money. A stock sale starts by wanting to address a felt need. We want to buy groceries at the end of the year. And we then come together to also instill discipline, that because if I were to put my money in maybe a tin or whatever, without other people who are doing the same with me, I may not in a particular month do that, and I would result with a situation where what I was supposed to save during the year in order to buy the groceries at the end of the year would not be achieved. So a stock fell teaches you discipline, because you are together with people that share a common need, and you put your own rules. In the stock fund, it is not only saving, it's also saving and borrowing, because you put in your money that you save, but you are forced to borrow. If you don't borrow, you pay interest. You pretend as if you have borrowed. You are not going to take. If it is in a stock fund, for you, for the stock fund to generate interest, you have to borrow 4,000 rand in a year and pay an interest of 120 rand in a month, because that is how most of the stock funds do. It's 30% in 100 rand, 30 rand. When you borrow 1,000 rand, you pay 30 rand. So, at the end of the year, every month, whether you have borrowed or not, if you don't choose to borrow, you still pay the interest, because it is the rules. That's how the stock fund is going to generate. If you borrow, you will pay the interest every month, but at the end of the year, you must bring back what you had borrowed, because that is what is going to make the stock fund to have an interest and be able to buy. If you have defaulted in paying your interest during the year, and you are able to bring back the money that you have borrowed, you get penalized. That is where the issue of discipline is. Because you have then punished other members who were supposed to get to this loan, because it is in a rotational form. So a stock sale is the foundation for developing cooperatives. If we wanted to develop cooperatives in South Africa, successful, that are owned by previously disadvantaged people, we should be looking at the stock sales. Because those people have, the stock sales are built in the same way as a cooperative. It's solidarity, it's community, it's development, and because if I wanted to borrow more than I have put in, I have to speak to him. And he will not borrow, but he will say to the group, what was supposed to be borrowed by him is going to be borrowed by me. That again is mutual understanding. So, now let us make a difference between a stock sale and an intermediary. Even if there would be 100 members who are borrowing from an intermediary, there is nothing common between the intermediary and those 100 people. Strangers. That person walks into that door of an intermediary because wofuna imali, and it ends there. And also, the 100 people that are borrowing from an intermediary don't meet. So there is no solidarity between the 100 people that are getting loans from the intermediary. So there is no self-policing and internal discipline that can be exercised. Whereas in a stock sale, There's internal discipline and self-policing, because we are working as a group. The presentation by NASASA, what is it that you do when people default, is similar to the presentation by the Kings of Midlands. If a member that we bought a car for failed to pay the installment, we took the car as the King of Midlands. But we continue to reduce the, we allocate a driver, because this person is not able to run the business, but the King of Midlands has got people that are able to run the business. That is solidarity. So this person doesn't lose the car. The car doesn't get repossessed and lose all the money. But it gets allocated to another person. And you don't lose your membership. And you are assisted to remain part of the membership. So the point that I'm making here is that it will be important for us to first understand the African culture of solidarity. What did Africans do in order to survive and have access to finance, be able to run businesses when the system of government was denying them those opportunities, and build on those, because that is the foundation that will make us succeed. If we come up with other things, we will then use a wrong criteria and a wrong formula to address the needs of those people. When I look at the presentations of the DFIs, I see people that walk looking up like this, whereas the mandate is saying your target, if you look at that pyramid of small, medium and micro, the FDIs are looking up to the top of the pyramid. They are not looking down to the street vendor, to the spaza shop owner, to the person who would get an opportunity today, that is, there is an event that is coming and I need to go and sell there, like the Grameen Bank would do. You get 50 rand in the morning, you can bring it out back in the afternoon, and you have made your profit. So let us understand the target group.
Thank you, Chair. I think one of the points that this is just one of the points of our deliberations today. There's a whole host of other points, that challenges that we open to discuss. The issue of awareness. Why are we still referring to the department on our presentation as DTI? How can we improve on that? How do we improve in terms of the information sharing? Why do SMEs, cooperatives, submit your application, your delays, only to at the end to be told that no, you need not to have submitted here, you need to have submitted on this door? Those are all the issues that are open for discussion. I think we open up the floor for that. Let's come up with ideas how to improve on those. Innovative ideas. I think we've got a think tank in this forum that can come up with quite creative ideas in resolving those issues. The department is here, DFIs are here, they're listening. Ms. Nkun.
Thank you. Currently, I don't know how the department is structured and how it's going to work going forward. But one of the things that I'd like to suggest is that the DFIs, as well as the supporting agencies, are actually structured in a way that if
a raw somebody comes from high school or university and they decide to start a business, they know where to go for advisory. That's where they get advisor, this is what you do and this is what you don't do. And then from there, this is where you register from registration. This is where you get funding. This is the DFI that is allocated or that is assigned to the funding up to this much. And all the preparedness and also to be sector specific, because there's nothing more painful than dealing with people in DFIs and trying to educate them about your industry, and then they have the key to say yes or no to the funding. And for me, that's the most critical part of funding, that the DFIs must be sector specific and understand and have sector experts within the DFIs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mchuna.
Mr. Chair, colleagues, just from the outside, maybe a little bit of a different perspective, and I'd like to just share that with the floor just for a second, and the way that we see it and the way that we understand it. We've been through the funding, not just through the small business development funding. We've been through whole funding from the IDC, the whole DOE, the whole sector. And something that in our minds, if we compare it to the Stockfell, is that in the Stockfell, there's a huge coordination factor. And in the presentation, we've seen it here, and this is what we see. Guys, in our venture in capital, and we'll present tomorrow this venture, the big thing that we've had was the one department would say to us, listen guys, can't the other department help you with the specific issues? And this is where we got stuck in saying, the one says, no, it maybe it's not for us. Because we, from the outside, came in and said, listen, we come to South Africa, what we'd like to do is to be able to look at where should we fit into the funding spectrum that does exist out there. And this is those issues that we sit with. And for that reason, we actually called departments together to be able, and DTIs, IDC guys, we've had DOEs and IDCs that we've, In a huge effort to bring them together and say, guys, we are between one or two of these organizations. We would like to participate in a sector that's huge, but also in the smaller sectors, because what we try to initiate is to start a new industry in South Africa that will really benefit from the very small, but you had to have the core. You had to have this star industry. And this is that coordination. What I see is that coordination in the Stockfells being brilliant through this organization that we've had a fantastic presentation from. And I really benefited and learned from that today. I think just participating in this venue of yours today, guys, makes us understand the whole situation much better. And it's a learning exercise. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Just for a second on the floor. Only after our presentation tomorrow we'll understand our problem. We've tried various avenues at the IDC for development, for rural development. We entered the job fund, the green fund, whatever you can think of, we already tried. At the IDC, Central Energy Fund, DTI, DBSA, and we came short 100%. In 4 years, not one fund was approved. Only one report back that we got a number of our applications that went in. The most difficult ones was the DTI ones. After 14 online, it gives you a criteria. You can only fill in 30 words. And it gives you a certain amount of time. That's lots of. I had to get my... It's not a joke, it's a truth. I had to give my daughter to computer scientist to fill in these forms. Because you get that 30 words, then the next item, 30 words, 30 words, it must solve. It throws everything away. And only once we had to respond back and say, you have entered. Otherwise, nothing, not a cent, not even a word back. But after our presentation tomorrow, you'll understand better.
Thank you, sir. Take the minister, then I'll take you, sir. Or I'll take... Oh, can I push you, sir?
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I'm in a very difficult position because I think, Honorable Chair, the complicity of accessing funding is what is giving me, you know, a challenge, because as an official I understand that aspect. But at the same time, my background tells me that I need to understand that we are aspiring to be a developmental state. Now, the issue of funding, especially for cooperatives, becomes a serious issue for me. And maybe, as I unpack this, let me just throw the spanner in the works to say the way, in fact, I've observed throughout the day, you know, during the presentations, that the manner in which the cooperatives are pitched, it is as if they are all meant to be operating at a very low scale. So they are perceived to be for people that are illiterate or that cannot really operate at a very high level and all that. So as a result, we are not even at a stage where we are engaging on, you know, what we'd like to see, like what's happening in Italy, where the co-ops themselves are owning big businesses and all that. So we are all discussing it at a level of, you know, the agricultural ones that we're... Yeah.
I just want to stop you there. Most of cooperatives are started by people who feel exploited in one way or the other. Whether it is a cooperative formed by doctors, whether it is a cooperative that is formed by workers, it's people who want to deal with their exploitation. Now, we can't pitch up cooperatives here in this room today to the level of Mondragon, to the level of the Nova Scotia cooperative movement, to the level of the Kenyan, to the level of Indonesia. We can't. Because we are a department of small business and cooperatives. To deal with what? To address those challenges, unemployment, poverty, and inequalities. That is one. It's the first workshop, and development is a process. Development is a process. Today we are looking at the instruments of the department to fund small businesses and cooperatives. And people that are presented here today, we are actually targeting the neglected group of that pyramid. We could bring in models here that would target people like Tulane Kubeka, Lawrence Mavundla, Osandile Zungu, at a different level. Which level is that? It is a level where you group businesses to compete with other big businesses. Let's say the construction industry. If it wanted to fight the big five of the construction industry, we could bring a model here that talks to those people. But the issue here that we need to be dealing with in the process of developing SMEs and cooperatives are the challenges of the country. It doesn't mean that we don't understand what cooperatives could do to actually turn around the whole economy and deal with capitalism. We are not at that level. We are at a great R level here. In terms of understanding the cooperatives, in terms of understanding the finance, the development finance institute, that is what we are dealing with today. We are dealing with the instruments designed to fund small business and cooperatives. And we brought to you people that have an experience of how you respond to them. Let us speak to that. As my other family is going to be born at first.
Mine will be on the question that was raised on marketing of the department instead of people that are still talking about it. I think we have a very active minister. She travels all over this country and speaking in the department.
We are not Vanaleo locals. Don't make a mistake of marketing the minister and the department. Mamet, the minister is all over, but the people are still referring to you as DTI. We have an active minister because that is not what we are looking at. We are saying what is making people to refer to you as DTI instead of Small Business Development.
I think the reason is we are using DTI tools that don't speak to our mandate, that speak to the DTI. That's where I was going with that. If maybe we could...
Because if we start by saying we have an active minister, we were saying the minister is not active. That is not what we are saying. We are saying there is confusion out there. You are still referred to as DTI. When people want a service, they are not talking about small business. Let's talk about that. I think we are the minister. I still mention small business. A brand is Kumagai, a small business, Engaziwa. The Department of Small Business Development, Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development is not known by the clients, the target group. They come here invited by us, Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development, but they talk about DTI. And here we have got the Sibukuni or Mercedes. You are here, let us correct that so that we come out here having found a solution that is going to make people talk about the Department of Small Business Development and not DTI.
I know, I know I've already said my point that I think we're using the wrong tools. These are old tools and they didn't seem to, Alanda already used these tools and we associate them with DTI. We need to formulate our own tools that speak to our mandate, our strategy. That's what I want. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Oh, Honorable Minister, I think you had your hand up. You still want to make a point? Okay.
Let us give the Minister a chance and remain here talking about this.
I have to leave, unfortunately, as I did apologize in the morning. And I think in my input, I did refer to that fact that we had DTI programs. And it was, there was a reason why we didn't want to just fold everything and throw it away. We are one government. We are not merely one government, a DTI and Small Business Development and all that. We are one government. And our view from the beginning was that those that were already in the pipeline of certain programs and certain projects,
There was no way I was going to come in and say, look at me, now I'm the new Minister of Small Business Development. That's fine, that's true, but if you don't have your immediate programs, then address the needs of the people with a budget. It doesn't make sense for you to want to look nice because you are suddenly a new minister. We didn't have a budget. And that we didn't have a budget was no secret to anybody. And we did indicate even from the very beginning that it's very unfortunate that we, this Department of Small Business Development and Small Business and Cooperatives started at the worst of times when it comes to our economy. If you look at what resources were there when other departments started, 21 years down the line, and what they were able to do within that period of time, and the time that we came in and we have a budget of 3.2 billion, which we have to spend within a period of 3 years, just compare that to the rest of the departments that are there and the budget that they have for that. I am also on record in saying one of the things we are not going to do, we are not going to hit ourselves on the wall and leave blood on the wall screaming and kicking, hey, we don't have money, when you know very well the space in which you are operating in. We said what we will do is to continue with those programs so that those that were already benefiting out of those programs, they are not finding themselves where now they can't even continue, whether it's cooperatives or small businesses or what. We said a year later, when we begin to have our own budget, then we will do a review so that at the end of the day, that review that we are doing is informed by the practical experience of the year, number one, is informed by the overall government approach to the economy of the country, to the empowerment of people and black people in particular from a radical economic point of view. That period is over now. Now is the time for us to really go deep into reviewing the programs. Even with the portfolio committee itself, I actually had to ask the previous acting DG, in the system of governance and all, shall we be allowed, after having presented our program and our budget to the portfolio committee, will we be allowed to go back so that we can come back and say, now we're in a better space of changing some of the programs that we have? The answer was yes. Even the portfolio committee agreed and said, yes, we shall do that because, you know, a year, to set up a department within a period of 1 year is not that easy. So I want to leave the meeting with this confirmation that that review program for us is very, very important. And that review program is not about just reviewing what we have on the basis of what DTI had. It's on the basis of what exactly is our mandate as of when we started. What exactly are the needs of small and medium enterprises as of the time that we started? Hence, these processes that are being undertaken by the portfolio committee are very important for us because this is the platform, other than other things that we do in trying to listen to people, this is a platform that we believe is important because the people who are sitting here as members of parliament, they represent constituencies. And it's those constituencies that talk to them to say we are not happy with this and this and this and that. That doesn't mean the only engagement we are having is this one of what we have with the portfolio committee. We've got other means, including the provincial activities. Let me just quickly also say, when I came in, there were usual conferences that I held, no, summits actually, they call them summits, that are supposed to be held each year by each province. I said, look, we can't have summits for the sake of summits. Summits, in my view, is something that is a culmination of climbing a mountain starting from the bottom of the mountain. Now, if you want to start from the bottom of the mountain in relation to the work that we do, you are saying, what is happening at district level? what is happening at provincial level, then what is happening at national level. What are the responsibilities of all the three layers that we are talking about in relation to supporting and building small and medium enterprise? We need to get that cleared out. And the year that I've been here clearly makes it to me. If we think we are going to sit at national level, and each and every individual that is wanting and crying for support is all going to run to national, we have a serious problem. I have said, the space that I've been in at the moment says to me, your local economic development structures, what are they about? What are they doing? How much resources do they have? Who are they focusing on? Who are they giving the money to? Because they, every year, they go and present their budgets and everything, and you'll be shocked to find that if you take local economic development and provincial budgets, you'll find that they're way bigger than even our own budget at national level. Now, then we have to be realistic. We need to make sure that even ourselves, as we go to the provincial level, we don't connect only to the premier, and then we don't know what is happening at the lowest level. The structures that already exist, because one of the things that I can assure you is good in South Africa, we've got very good governance institutions. We've got the best. Our challenge is, one, how do they talk to each other? When do they talk to each other? For what purpose do they talk to each other? When the chairperson says here we are addressing three issues for South Africa, does everyone at all level understand these three issues that we are talking about? Worst of all, not only the political people, do the officials who are sitting in support of the official of the political heads who take a decision that we have three challenges in South Africa, the officials that are with me, because I can't be everywhere all the time, the officials are getting paid for this. The officials are supposed to understand the statistics and everything. The officials are supposed to even understand what were the proclamations or what were the political decisions that were taken and why were they being taken. This is the weakness also in the system, where at a political level you take the right decisions. You are informed by your policies, your everything. Then you look behind you, you find that maybe a few next to you, they understand. As you go further and further, and the more they are further from you, the more you are in serious trouble, because you're not touching them on day-to-day basis. Sometimes you take it for granted that we all one, we have one plan, we have to implement that plan, only to find that somewhere along the line it's lost. Even the energy of how much energy we put from an intellectual point of view, from a physical point of view, from being there for the people, being able to be available, to change the system that they're talking about there, about having to fill up a form and there's only 30 characters that you fit in there. I mean, it is just painful. It is, for me, it is painful when you come across people telling me exactly that. So what's the point of having that registration electronic where they sit in the office and they think doing that electronic is cutting them from being all over the show, whereas the system that they've put in place that makes it very difficult. Imagine the time that has to be spent. And my understanding of the enterprise development, entrepreneurship, small business and all, they hardly even have the time to be doing that. So we need to reverse all those things that are not working. However, it is also not correct to think overall that nothing has ever happened. Everything is doom and gloom. I cannot walk out of here feeling that everything is doom, because I have people who are rightfully here to make the presentation, because what they are talking about is something that they feel, they see each and every day, and it's a frustration. And it's a frustration that, in my view, shouldn't be happening at this point in time. There are others who I think much later maybe they can also be invited, who will come here and tell you how much help they have received from the very same institution that we are talking about, from the very same department that we are talking about. The unfortunate thing about department is that, again, as I said, people started 21 years ago. the resources that they had for going out and doing your, what you call them, road shows and all that. We don't have that luxury. Don't have a luxury for road shows. So we need to use the whatever resources that we have in our place to make sure that people are conscious, people are aware of our programs. And my view is we need to go down to the lowest level, using the local economic development structures, the provincial structures. I must say there are provinces that are really doing well with us because they are inviting us. They are talking about small business development. I don't have to be everywhere for people to talk about us. But we've got premiers of some provinces, MECs in some provinces who are very clear about the fact that we need to work with each other very closely so that we can cut out these frustrations. Lastly, I think what I think is very important is mobile. If we can just get FIFA, CEDA, at least coming together and utilizing the resources, and then at that level of local economic development also coming together, if we can begin to have mobiles that can go to our communities. And I don't believe that we must go to our communities just to distribute paper. I've been saying that to FIFA and CEDA. I am not going to be going with you when you go and you are sitting in the outside. We are in the hall. People are inside the hall and talking about their challenges. Where now you are sitting outside and just sitting like that and just distributing the pieces of paper like that which were printed. We need to be much more vibrant, much more active. When we go to places, FIFA, CEDA, all agencies must then come inside so they can be able to listen what the complaints of the people are. I think, again, it's unfortunate that small business development was only given this opportunity now, but just like entrepreneurs are creative, just like businesses are creative, I think that also we have the capacity to be creative and begin to change the narrative, because I don't want to live in a narrative that seems to be saying everything is just, you know, I want to live in a narrative. I must be able to give hope to the people that are here. And my view is that this department, small as it is, with little budget that it has, we have a potential and opportunity for us working hand in hand with others, because I believe the private sector, the role of the private sector is very important. I recall that Honorable Chance, one of the first speeches that he made was that we were not talking to the private sector. I didn't take that very lightly, because I don't think I should have taken it lightly, because I do believe that the potential that's out there, and the small business, what's her name, Ntombi. Ntombi spoke here and was clearly indicating the partnership with the private sector, because when she realized her frustrations, she found an outlet. But the unfortunate thing is that there won't be so many Ntombis if we don't pull ourselves to be organized, because Ntombi can say she went to Pick and Pay, and they were able to assist her. Somebody else somewhere will say, no, I've not opened the doors of Pick and Pay. They've never even bothered to open the doors for me. And I think that if we can pull our efforts together and use the little resources that we have in South Africa in empowering our people and focusing on black people, that's not to say we are saying we'll only focus on black people, the other small businesses that are there, that are doing well, must be ignored. My view is that all small and medium enterprises, when they come through, irrespective of their color, we must be able to assist them, because those that are successful, they are a good show for us to say, this is what they are doing. However, we can't run away from one fact. The majority of our people, black people in particular, were out of the system. We need to pull them into the system for small and medium enterprises and beyond, quite frankly. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, for those words. At this point in time, I would like to take this opportunity to give an opportunity. I think there was a hand right at the back. Oh, yeah, you sir. But before you start, if maybe whatever points that we make, let's also start focusing on
once we do our deliberations, what sort of recommendations are you putting forward, workable solutions? Because also...
Chair, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'd just like... I have one question for the Minister before she leaves. Would you allow me that opportunity before you speak? Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, Minister, but last week there was a workshop convened by the DTI on support and refinancing for the township industrial parks. Now, there wasn't any clarity given as to whether those parks were the parks that are owned by CIFA, or whether they're other parks. And I'd just like to know if you have an answer to that question, because you know, it speaks to the very issue that we're talking about. Why is the DTI financing parks that necessarily are small business parks? Why isn't it something that is done by the Department of Small Business Development? Maybe you could just clarify that.
Would you take it?
Before I respond.
Honourable Minister.
In the beginning I said I am a bit confused in relation to CIFA. We wrote a letter to the Department of Finance Treasury requesting that the unit within Treasury that deals with the Cooperative Development Bank joins us in this meeting to be part of the discussion. I don't know whether there was a misunderstanding or what, but the response that we got was that the Minister of Finance responded in a context of saying that the role of the Department of Finance, National Treasurer, is to ensure that resources are allocated to meet South Africa's priorities and to improve the quality and effectiveness of spending within sustainable fiscal limits. And then line departments are mandated to implement the strategic priorities of government with their allocations. And therefore the National Treasury is not in a position to present on the funding model of SMEs and cooperatives. I think there was an understanding because we are not asking for the Department of Finance. We were asking for a unit within Treasury which is dealing with the Cooperative Development Bank, which relates to the work that we do for cooperatives. And we wanted to have a common understanding of what the working relationship is going to be and what progress has been made in that regard. But the letter further says that the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development is accordingly requested to extend the invitation to present at the proposed workshop to the Department of Small Business Development and Economic Development, and in brackets, which is the executive authority of the Industrial Development Corporation, of which the Small Enterprise Finance Agency is a subsidiary. That's where my conclusion is, that we had an understanding, Minister, that CIFA has migrated to follow the function to small business. This letter to me is confusing and I would want to be clarified as to whether CIFA is still with Economic Development and the subsidiary of ITC. And if that is the case, how do we relate to CIFA as this portfolio committee?
Chairperson, I'll start with the last question. That issue is done and dusted. There is no ambiguity about it. The migration of CIFA to the Small Business Development is a done and dusted issue. I think that what we need to do, what I need to do in taking responsibility at a political level, is to engage with Treasury and Finance or whoever that needs to be engaged with, because from where the Minister of Economic Development is and the cluster, because by the way we work through the cluster, this issue was completed and finished already. So I don't know why you have a letter like that. I think if there's any confusion, it's not with you, because you know we've been making presentations to this committee. We've spoken about this matter. We've had our meetings. We've finalized everything. There isn't even confusion within FIFA itself, because we have already even had an opportunity of meeting with FIFA, where even the Minister of Economic Development availed himself just for us to make sure. Even letters that needed to be written, letters have been written. The MOU, which is supposed to be between ourselves and EDD as well as IDC, those things are completed already. So I don't know where that confusion starts from. But however, I do think I need to take that responsibility of engaging if there are places where there are still people who feel not very clear about something that has been clarified. It would be good for me to have a copy of that letter, because then I can easily follow it up with my colleague. The issue that was raised by Mr. Chance, Honorable Chance, is that Honorable Chance, in the process of the work that we have to do and what needs to come to the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development, we still do have issues, things that were done by the DTI, which sometimes when you go deeper into them, you realize that some things are not necessarily specifically only for small and medium enterprises. They are bigger, so we can't necessarily say we are cutting the umbilical cord, because we're still connected one way or the other. And also I think it would not be fair to think that within a year of operation, you will have almost each and everyone in line, not sometimes feeling like, no, this was ours, we need to keep it with us, we think that we're doing it. For me, those issues are going to be things that we'll have to keep on fighting until the last time where each and every person behind every desk understands that some things now are with the small and medium enterprises. The challenge obviously we also have is that our capacity is not necessarily what it should be in terms of as much personnel that we need to have. So it will take us a little bit more time than anticipated to really say that we are completely 100% standing on our own 2 feet. Because remember that even with our administration and management, the process takes a long time, because government also wants you to make sure that in your accountability processes, you have to make sure that your systems can be held entirely accountable. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, once again. I will then move over to right at the back, but I would like to then also highlight that when we started the deliberation, we had a target, which was 6 o'clock. And we only left about 15 minutes to reach 6 o'clock, but at the time I said we would leave this room at 6 o'clock. So what I'm proposing is, whatever points you make, please suggest recommendations, put up recommendations or workable solutions, and we'll take that this particular continuity, particular discussion up until 6 o'clock, and then after that, after 6, then we'll hand over to Honorable Chair to give us her closing remarks. Once again, please stick to the point, straight, nice and sweet.
I must thank you for this opportunity again. I think I'm getting, my hope is coming back again. What I think needs to be done, which is just my opinion. During the time I was still working with cooperatives, which is almost all over the country, what I've realized was there is a gap between the funding institutions and the technical know-how that is required, especially for cooperatives or SMEs. We've got cooperatives who want to say they want to start something, or an SME who've got an idea, not necessarily having the market or not necessarily having the expertise, or having expertise but not necessarily expertise that really allow them to actually take opportunity of the economy. I think going forward, the department, the SME department needs to have a department, not necessarily a department, but an area or where if being requested for funding, then there can be other services that is more than just the funding. Maybe mama is coming and saying, I want to purchase school uniforms. I'm making an example. But really, and saying I'm instead, for instance, for cooperative, we've got 350,000 fund that is available for them. But at this point, where are they? Do they have a space? Things like that. No, they don't have a space. Is the equipment that they are applying for relevant for the product that they want to manufacture? Just small things like that. Because when I was actually assisting the CEDA technology program, I've picked up whereby an SME will already have a funding that has been approved, but then when you sit down and start going through with a business, within business, and taking the product that she intends to actually manufacture, or the market that she's looking at, then you find out, but the equipment listed is not a relevant equipment. Or the market that she's actually wanting to approach is not really, she's not really ready for that. I think having that knowledge, having the assessment from the financial side, and also having the technical expertise document that says where is this person actually is in terms of the expertise and what type of equipment that is required for the product that this person is going to make, will also limit the funds that are being spent on cooperatives. Because to tell the truth, there are cooperatives who were funded, and when you go back there, you find that the machines are actually, it's like white elephants. They are sitting there. Whether it's because of a limited lack of access to market, or whether it's because that the people at that time when they were forming this cooperative, it was just excitement that we're going to be getting the 350,000 fund, or whatever the case might be. But at the end of the day, we need to, within the department, within this small business department and cooperative, we need to look at that and say there has to be technical advice that is involved before we actually look at the funding. So that the mamas that are coming to the department, you don't just say, okay, is your business registered? And says no, and then go back. Or do you have a market? No, and then go back. There has to be somewhere, a room, where a person can go and say, okay, go inside there, get an advice about this, about the sector you want to get yourself involved in, and then get a, then that person can be assisted as to which processes that she needs to follow, what needs to be done within the things that are actually
even sometimes things that not necessarily funding at the beginning, things that the advisor she just needs to understand before she can engage into that particular sector. Thank you.
Thank you, Ndombi. I will take you, sir.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think from listening to what the colleagues are saying, especially the SMMEs that we're presenting today, I picked up, I think, a couple of things that I think will need to change going forward. One, I think, is the attitude. I think the way we treat SMMEs or our clients will need to change because we exist, I think, for them. It's not the other way around. I think the other thing is non-financial support services that we are providing are not enough. The issue of compliance, the issue of management accounting, I think those issues are the things that we need to look at in terms of supporting SMEs and cooperatives. And I think the issue of hand-holding, I think it was emphasized by almost all the presenters, is very critical that the type of service that we offer should make the SMEs or a co-op feel that we are really there to support them. We are not there just to look after our own interest in terms of whether we'll be able to get our money back that we've invested in a business. And then lastly, we know that we always sometimes have challenges in terms of capacity. So the solution, I think, will be that we look at the type of people that we use to extend our services. It should be people who are more developmental in their thinking, not just consultants who are there to make a quick buck. So we need to really look at the community-based organizations, for example. Those are the people that can assist us to drive the issue of addressing the triple challenges, which is poverty, unemployment, and inequality. Thanks.
Well said. Thank you very much, sir. Any other takers? We still have a bit of time on this particular slot. Honorable Chair.
There are two secondary cooperatives that presented here. One was Ukozi, and they cited a number of cooperatives that are under them. The question that I have for Ukozi is, cooperatives that you are assisting shareholders of the secondary cooperative, or the secondary cooperative is providing a service to the cooperatives, the primary, because I would have no other way of calling them other than to say they are primary cooperatives if you are a secondary cooperative. So the question is, are those cooperatives that you are servicing shareholders in the secondary cooperative, or the secondary cooperative is a service provider to those cooperatives that you presented here? The same question would apply. The same question would apply to the Kings of Midlands Secondary Cooperative. Today, you are a secondary cooperative with clear objectives. Do you have cooperatives below you who are members of the secondary cooperative, or you are a service provider to primary cooperatives that are not necessarily members of the secondary co-op? That with a Ukozi.
Harriet Ukozi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the primary cooperatives that we have in our database do have shareholding on the secondary cooperatives. For us to have a secondary cooperative, we need to register a number of primary cooperatives. So that on its own makes it possible for the primary cooperatives to have a say and a shareholding in the secondary cooperative. So the answer is yes.
Then the question to you, are you going to be here until Wednesday?
I will be here, yes.
Okay.
The King of Midlands, Sandy Way.
Thank you, Chair. We got 10 primary cooperatives who are affiliated to King of Midlands, which is a secondary cooperative. Each and every chairperson from the board of this primary cooperative, they represent them at the secondary cooperative. That's how the board of members, the board of King of Midlands is formed. Thank you.
The same question again. Are you going to be here until Wednesday?
Yes.
The reason I'm asking that is that we are having the Mondragon cooperative model being presented here on Wednesday.
Okay. On that note, I would then like to open up, I still have about 5 minutes for this slot. Any takers? Any points, any recommendations? Any workable solutions on all the challenges that you've outlined? Let's make sure that we do not leave any of the challenges highlighted today. Let's take this opportunity, it's a rare opportunity, let's take it with both hands. And, thank you. Tina will be leaving tomorrow, so I'm taking the opportunity. I think a very critical area that needs to be addressed, as Mr. Chabela called, is the issue of the compliance or the qualifying criteria to apply for names at the DFIs. It needs to be simplified and not have a lot of complex requirements that are not cannot be met by the SMMEs. If the House allows, I have it's like five, basically, I don't want to call them not points, but requirements that I would suggest, knowing the situations of SMMEs on the ground. That would be if they can produce a business plan using a standard template, a business plan that they will produce is easy to complete, which would reflect your overhead, your selling price, cost of production, overhead, selling price, profit margin. That should be what should be expected in the base plan. The rest of issues about depreciation of movable assets and factoring debt becomes a problem. And then the last two things they should have is the tax clearance and the bank account. I think if you have those, then small business can be able to start applying for finance and qualifying. The rest of the things become a problem because, as I said, even now, for example, there's a car wash by my in our area. It's been going on for many, many years on BioLab. But I can never refer him, they do it manually, I can never refer him to DFI because I know he would never meet the criteria. He has a family, he's been feeding for many years from that. But I know for a fact that he would never qualify. But with these requirements, it's a matter of owning a bank account, tax clearance, and the basic, this is what my cost of production, profit margin is this, overheads are this. Then SMMEs can begin to be able to apply for at the DFIs and stand a chance of qualifying. I thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nkomo. You can your mic off. Any other recommendations?
Yes, I'll back him up 100% on that criteria because we also want corporates incorporated and there'll be a lot of very poor people to operate the corporates. And if they don't comply to your rules, they will not get money to do it.
Thank you, sir. It's done. I think in the absence of any
Are you? I see you pressing your mic, sir.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Yes. I will take you.
No, I just want to come up with a suggestion that this deliberation must be closed. If we leave, we can email it to you, some of the suggestions when we meet our competitors. Because some of the competitors, we meet them and find out what are the problems. Sometimes you can say some of the things of which other competitors, they've got the problems that we don't know.
Do you want to respond to that? Nothing, no.
Cool. No, thank you very much, sir, for that point. Any other hands? I don't see any. Okay, you, sir?
I'm not sure. Thank you, sir. I'm not sure, but I think it's one of the issues that has been puzzling, or I've been having a question on. Personally, as one of my expectations was to clarify this whole issue around small business. What is the definition? I think it's critical that we clarify it as a country so that the resources within DFIs also do not fall far. We want to focus on what has been identified is the key challenge. And I know when we discuss, we always make certain references to certain businesses as not being part of small business. But I would personally, if we could find time during the workshop to also clarify our process so that when we go back, we're very clear on that particular issue in terms of what is the definition of small business, what do we mean, what is the cutoff, what are we using, what measure are we using. Because if I were to make an example, an emerging contractor who gets a tender to build a school for 30 million rand, the ones that we find and support faces the same challenges as any other business. Now you get into a situation where this guy has got a tender for 30 million rand, but everyone thinks that it's not small business. What makes a small business? Is it the amount of the tender that you run, or the mega resources that you have to execute on that? Because you're going to come to me and say, borrow me 1.5 million rand, I want to go and hire scaffolding. So it's trying to mobilize the resources of that particular those stupid comments at the work. And that's where we get confused as to what exactly do we mean when we say small business, because to me, like, every black business is small business.
You can switch off the mic for me, please. Honorable Chair, do you want to add something on that, or before I close on this subject? There's a hand. Can I just take one last one and then close, because it's definitely after six, and then I'll take you, Honorable Chair.
No, maybe it's more of a question in a way from the chair. I see that on our program we don't have the presentations to be done by our own grants or incentives unit on what we offer, so that we can hear also from the colleagues and stakeholders that are here with Lendesibela, Pavela, Nabubati, Ngayo. Maybe it's by design or by omission, by commission or by omission, that we don't have them. Our incentive schemes are our small business for presentation here. Or remember, yeah. Because I see CIFA is here, but within the department itself, we've got a whole unit at the Lagama Cooperatives Grant, Black Business Supplier Grants, and even now we are heading towards informal economy grants as well. Are we in the right track also with those? So that unless the essence is that now, with what we receive from here, that's what we say now we need to go and revise from what exists. But I think it would have been good to have also just a brief presentation is to hear what is it that we offer. Thanks.
Before I hand over to Madam Chair, I think I've closed this issue, then now I'm going to hand over to Madam Chair, then she can also do her closing remarks.
I think the point that is being made is a valid point, because if we are looking at the funding instruments, particularly of the department, we should be looking. We should be giving them an opportunity to make presentations. Particularly, I see that in the program, we have the the South African Spaza Shops and Taverns Association, but we don't have the support service that relates to that presenting. So I should think that we should relook at the program. The facilitators and the support staff can look at that and try and find a spot. I want us to reflect again on what is it that we are here to do. One, we are here to look at what is it that we have done in the past 20 years to finance small businesses and cooperatives. Number two, what is the impact of that which we have done in the past 20 years in funding small businesses and cooperatives, particularly in enabling them to have a positive impact on poverty reduction, unemployment reduction, and inequality reduction. Thirdly, we are here to look at what are the gaps that we are identifying. What are these things that we should have done better for us to then achieve better results? And lastly, what changes do we then need to effect in order to close those gaps? We are not in an appraisal meeting where we are going to say how much of the good things as opposed to the bad things. We are here responding to what people who are not satisfied with our products have said. You don't correct what is right, you correct what is wrong. So we are not going to be blowing a trumpet and saying, but endaweni ethize, kuhle endaweni ethize, because if we do that, we will miss the opportunity of correcting that which needs to be corrected. Now, in this meeting, we are also looking at what are the issues that have been raised by SMMEs and cooperatives, even before you came here. It's lack of access to finance, lack of access to the market, lack of adequate technical skills and business management skills support, lack of infrastructure to operate in, and support infrastructure that makes a business to succeed. And that is energy supply, adequate energy supply, adequate communication services supply, adequate transport infrastructure, and adequate energy infrastructure. That is what we are talking about when we talk of the infrastructure. The fifth issue that is being raised by SMMEs and cooperatives is red tape. Red tape in terms of processing applications. In some situations, services are fragmented. That is a red tape. In some situations, people would get funding, but the payments would not be made, the release of funds. approved, but the funds are not released to a level where we would lose the contract. Red tape that was highlighted by Ntombi, that I had to choose which meeting I go to. I go to a meeting where I'm going to be told that my application has been disapproved, or I go to the meeting where I am going to engage with the client that has given me the contract. That is a red tape. And there are businesses that have closed, having received funding, received contracts, supplied goods, but because of non-payment of invoices, they have to close down. We are still going to have that workshop because it will not be correct for us to overlook problems and challenges that are experienced by SMMEs when they have been brought to our notice. There are then questions that we will still need to respond to. The first question was asked by Honorable Kruger before we even started with the presentation. The question was, can we be updated as to what had sent to Elna from Mpumalanga, who came to during the time we were dealing with the budget vote, and the promise was made that both Sifa and Frida would look at her application. We don't have Elna here. Maybe we should have invited her so that she would have been able to tell us what progress has been made, what assistance has she received since that time. But nevertheless, we are here to represent her. We are public representatives who want to get that feedback. And then there are issues that have been identified here during the deliberations, which in the morning I would want the facilitators to put them down for us to get a debriefing of how we conducted ourselves today. Did we answer the question of lack of awareness of available instruments for SMEs and cooperatives? Did we answer the question of lack of awareness of the department itself? Did we answer the question of lack of what is expected in an application? Did we answer the question of trust from funders and SMEs, lack of trust, lack of non-financial support? The NYDA and lack of coordination. There are issues that I would want to touch on. You see, when people begin to give names to create their own names on something, like a service. Presenter stands here, who's supposed to be happy, you can see, okay, this person has not been happy to a level where has created a new description of, to make you aware of the situation, of the felt need. Mtuna says a toddler link. And she even, during her presentation, made movements of how a toddler, what a toddler does when he or she starts to walk. And she makes us all imagine what people around a toddler do when the toddler is beginning to walk. You all come with your hands to try and give support to the toddler so as not to prevent the toddler from falling. And she says that is the stage where all the support services are needed. But if this toddler doesn't get the support and the toddler falls, and ubuzake umbuzo ukuthi how do we look at failure? And I think she was trying to make us understand the pain that she went through when she could not get the support as a toddler, when her expectations have been highly raised, when Pick and Pay and Woolworths gave her contract. I can't remember whether Pick and Pay that said we gave her a 20 million contract. I can't remember whether it was Woolworths or Pick and Pay, but one of those, if the two multinational retailers gave her a contract, sitting here as the FI, we should be embarrassed. That a young woman, black, was given that opportunity, and all that blocked her from fulfilling that contract was our systems. We should really be embarrassed. That's what she's talking about when she says toddler. This toddler was not supported to walk, and the toddler fell down and broke both legs. Untombi yena kasho ukuthi toddler, ukuthi it's roadblocks. Yena kasho, Untombi doesn't describe herself as a toddler. Mthunu yena uthi uyi toddler that needed support. Untombi uthi mina I'm not a toddler. I was walking and I could even run. But I came across a lot of roadblocks. When you are described as roadblocks, I remember in one session when I was still working at Welfare State, we had a session like this, and it was called a team building, where we had to tell our directors how they support us or not provide us with support, and we were free to make that person see how he or she impacts on you. And I called my director a pothole. And in those sessions we would sit in a circle, and then two chairs would be put at the center. And any person who wants to give, it was a team building, it is like, who gives, to give anyone a feedback about how the behavior of that person impacts on the work of another person, whether it's a person in your team or not in your team. I then stood up and sat at the center, and I called my director, my executive director, to sit in front of me. And then I said to the director, to me you are a pothole. I can't move. Because each time I move, you stand. You are a very big pothole. And when people begin to describe you in that way, you must know that you have impacted very, very negatively. So I would want us to discuss those things, to say the department and the each entity, are you happy to be called roadblocks? Is it okay for Tune to feel that she's a toddler that is not supported? Then, lastly, I would want us to reflect again tomorrow what was raised by all the people who presented. Umchum says, I have secured a market. I have secured a market. I lost that market. So, those are the things that you should be looking at. Ukhomo uthi, isibhedlela isithombe laphaya of a project that was funded, and he says it appears on the IDP as a funded project. But all that was done are the polls, 2012. He even says we wanted Tina to have layers which require a different chicken space than the broilers. But the person from the department came and told us that we must put a structure that will accommodate both. That's not what they wanted to do. They had done their homework. They wanted to have layers. Why then the official comes to say, put this one? Which is something that applies to many people, that officials would want to change. And Kunti saying, you give us people to assist us who have no knowledge of that industry. I'm advised by the person who doesn't understand that industry. And it's not only her, you will hear from Koa. Business plans that people would come and they will be given consultants to assist them with business plans on a sector that the consultant doesn't know, he's not an expert of. And all that happens at the end is that the consultants earn the money, but the entrepreneur's business doesn't take off. So we must discuss these things, because after this it will not be workshops. It will be real accountability. Because we shall have taken you through processes that would have made you understand what our thinking is. And we would expect that you would respond accordingly. I think we should revisit the issue of the department being known. Because I think even the response is, to me, it doesn't capture the spirit of what we are saying. If the department cannot acknowledge that it was wrong for it to continue using the website and send letters out under the material written DTI, you can't see that as something wrong, then you will not know what we are talking about. We are not talking about the department having to continue providing services that were provided by DTI. But we are talking about the department being known and be distinct from DTI. Continue with the services, but it should be known, the label must be small business. And I don't think that you need an evaluation to actually design a website. So, the department must learn to admit when it's wrong.
We are not talking about the service. We are talking about the department being known and sending information with its own identity. Yes, with Umupetukshat, Vandavani Vak with Smogos again. But because the Sugabu Kuku grown, Ubutushati, you want everybody to call you with the new surname Yala Ushateleko. So we want to have a department that people are talking about it. Itinerary E letter. Epale UTTI. Email. Letterhead that UTTI. The email address that UTTI got a Usu business. You could be in the same building. But to have your own letterhead, your own identity, is very, very important in marketing. That's all that we are saying. And if you can't take responsibility of that acting DG as a department, then I don't know what is it that you would take responsibility of. To me, there is no excuse for that. So, we really thank Itala, because each time we ask Itala to come and assist us, they avail themselves. Itala doesn't come to us, but there is a lot that we can learn from Itala, because Itala has gone through other stages. There was a time when, if you were in KwaZulu Natal, Kuluma Getala, people would say, I see Agin Getala. But today, there is pride about services that are given by Itala. And if the leadership of Itala was able to turn around Itala and make it relevant to SMEs and cooperatives, even here, we can make that happen. So we thank you, and also you must convey our appreciation to the board of Itala and also to the CEO, because whenever we ask you to come, you don't say you don't account to us. You come and share your experiences with us. And there is a lot that we can learn from Itala in terms of how it has turned around its response to SMEs and cooperatives. Thank you very much, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank everybody that came here. If you can explain your challenge, I go to Paul. Go to Paul, it means there was a need to go to Senator. But go to Nizomuzi, so that's a gear Paul. Thank you. Thank you very much.
considered me about even kind of a Taliban before. Yama is local. Oh, take Kingston is far. We prepared up and what's that place you buy and hide and Kingston, that's far, that's not far.
Thank you. That's why you have to